This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling. So.
That's what she said!
So why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Oral. A-U-R-A-L.
What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Vincent's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course, as the lacrosse player. Bismarck. No, was it? Bismarck wasn't it?
Lismarck.
No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what
you're
doing.
Our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your host, Justin Rosero, to meet you live here on this Monday evening, back in our normal time slot, our normal night, and it feels like home, you know, Scott Criscola. It's like, it's always weird when we have to do a different night or a different time or whatever. It's just, you know, Mondays, 8-ish, vintage vault, it's what it is.
It is. It's always good to be back. And always good to be with you, JR. Good evening. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 392 of the Mothership on this Martin Luther King birthday. We don't have, maybe we'll play. You know, I never thought about this because, you know, Vince always does at the beginning of Raw. Maybe we should put a little I Have a Dream clip in the beginning, kind of soothing in like he does for Raw.
We'll let him do the exploiting. We'll just sit here and
we'll let him do the shilling.
We'll commemorate the day, that's all.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, it is Martin Luther King Day, of course. So I was off, you were off. Okay. I know a few people that had to work today, sadly, but... And it seems like after, 2 months of wonderful winter temperatures in the 70s, it's winter now.
Well, never
fails. It's decided no more fucking around.
It's time for you to
be kicked in the balls.
You know, it's like, you know, all these weekends with nothing going on, it never snows. And it's always the first weekend that we get shit doing on. Like last year, yeah. It snowed. Yeah. The only night it snowed like for 2 months was the night we went to the Bruins game. And then the first major storm was, of course, right when we had to drive to Philly for the Rumble.
Yes, now and drive home.
Right. And now this year there's been, like, not much. We had a little bit last night, but not a lot. And now they're saying, like, a big storm, of course, Saturday when you're coming in for the Bruins game. You know, it never fails. And I love how the storm is supposed to be, like, Friday night to Sunday. It's like, the perfect time to screw us over. It's like,
it's
any other
start...
day, we would have been okay, you know?
Yeah, it's supposed to start, like, 2 a.m. on Friday into Saturday and then end at 8 a.m.
Sunday. Right. It's like just enough to really screw us over no matter what we tried to do. So
yeah. Ugh. No. We'll get into that. We'll get into that offline. Judging by how you're sounding, of course, you had a bit of a rough weekend.
I had a 0.6 on the Pittsburgh scale this weekend.
Oh, God. Because, I mean, anything on the Pittsburgh scale is worse than Muda. That's for sure.
Bad, bad stomach bug. Although not the worst. I mean, sadly, I've had worse. Like that. I've had three over the last 5 years. I was figuring this out as I was laying there. The first one was in 2011, and my wife was away from work, and I was just like crippled on the couch for 2 days. That was really bad. I mean, really, really bad. That's probably the worst I've had. Pittsburgh was like just below that. Pittsburgh was compounded by the fact that I was alone in a hotel room, you know, while everyone else was out. And I was
everyone else thought you were like some crack whore.
You know, that compounded Pittsburgh, and then having to walk around in, you know, 3-degree weather after.
Right.
Getting carried down the street by Flanagan. But this one was, like, not as bad, but it still sucks. You know, just that laying in bed. I mean, I feel like other colds you can kind of fight through, like a head cold or a chest cold. You can get stuff done. Like, if right. I just had a bad head cold, I would have been at the PC game Saturday. You know what I mean? But stomach bug, you can't do it. You just can't. It cripples you. And then you get the headache that goes with it. That's like the worst part, you know, where your head's just throbbing. And you just can't do anything. You're useless. And then it takes you a day to recover because you didn't eat anything. And then I woke up this morning and I had to go shovel. So I was like, this sucks.
Ugh.
But I pulled it together today.
And one I remember even before that, but that one wasn't a bug. We knew the reason for that. And that was just after you moved, when you came back in 2000, I guess it was 2006, when you were going to do, when you did NFL preseason.
Oh, yes.
And you and the fucking yard gnome went to Bobby V's. And you had that, what we now call the death chili.
And, well, the funny thing is that wasn't as bad because once you get it out,
it's gone.
It's over with. So it's kind of like, all right, I'm done. I threw up. I went to the bathroom. It's out. I'm moving on. Like, I ate like a ton of food right after that.
That's right. So we were doing, what was I doing? I think it was, for some reason, I pretty much remember it being SummerSlam 94 for the original run of the vaults. And you were lying here on my couch, like literally half cocked and pale, and you let it out. We went to work, and then we enjoyed the free dinner evening. So it is kind of different when you could shut it off and move on. But yeah, when it's internal, you're cooked until it decides it doesn't want to cook you anymore. So, but well, it's good that you're here. You sound a little bit better. Sound a little like 88% recovery. Sounds like.
Yeah, you know. Throat hurts. I'm throwing up, so a little raspy.
Yes, exactly.
And this time I've developed a cough from like some nasal drip or something. So I'm doing well.
Yeah, but it's good to have you here, of course, as always. And it is Monday again because the next vault will not be on a Monday, of course. So might as well do it this time on a Monday. But didn't do much this weekend myself. It was fairly cold here, and we had some snow Sunday. Not nearly as bad as you had this weekend. We had some snow yesterday. Seems like not as bad as you, but we did get a decent amount.
Not too much. I'd say we got maybe a couple inches at the most.
Well, when I was recording, when we were doing Sports Evolution last night, Senior was mentioning that I think near his neck of the woods, they got, he says when he gets it halfway decent, usually Cowboy gets pummeled because I guess he's a little more north than Senior is. So,
well, yeah, Senior's kind of near the water, so he gets the water effect there.
Right.
But where Cowboy moved now, he's right in the snow belt. He's like where I went to college. That was like, you know, we always got whacked whenever any snow came through.
Yeah.
So he'll be, you know, he moved at the worst time to move to that area. So he'll be
exactly.
Hit pretty good.
Yeah. So, any event, we're here though, and we'll. To hell with the snow. To hell with Mother Nature. Because we had a fun show tonight because...
Hey, what is going on here?
I don't know, but aren't you supposed to be off? Go home. Come back tomorrow. Tonight, inside the big steel box, we have one question to ask. Because when he's in here and we see all these nachos on the floor, we're asking, what's indeed causing all this? Andy Gibb.
And you will not be unforgiven.
That's right. Tonight, inside the Vintage Vault, we bring you Unforgiven 2005. And this begins a stretch, maybe not here. I was thinking about this today while I was watching it, and I want to bring this up, JR, because I feel like this is going to be a prevalent topic from here on out for the rest of our vaults throughout time. You know, during the heydays, Federation years, New Generation, Attitude Era, post-Attitude, you know, 02, 03...
You're supposed to pluralize heyday?
Heydays?
I don't know. That doesn't sound right.
I think it's heyday either way. I think it's
Willie heydays.
Context. Willie heydays. You run like heydays, but you hit like shit. And, you know, if you're a diehard like us, and most of the people that listen here, of course, on the great Place B podcast on placebnation.com, almost every pay-per-view, you can remember something in your head, most of it, in your house. Five or, you know, Over the Edge 98, Armageddon 2001, things like, you know, Vengeance 01. These, you know, most secondary papers you can at least get a grasp of. But I feel like starting here, maybe not until truly end of 06 into 07. I think, and let's be honest, I think a lot of people will start going, God, I remember nothing about this show. I mean, we were chatting in our one of our threads today, and even Chad, and Chad's got a steel trap for a memory, a wrestling memory. Even he wasn't sure if he remembered the show or not.
Right.
So I think we're going to get to the point, JR, where a lot of these secondary shows, because everybody remembers Manias and everyone remembers SummerSlams. Rumbles, for the most part, and then Survivor Series, it depends. So taking out the big four, from here on out, I bet you a lot of our listeners are going to be listening to our secondary show, Vaults, and go, Jesus, I don't remember this at all.
No, I know. I'm going to be dead. You know? Way. I mean, I didn't remember a chunk of this show.
Yeah.
And like we mentioned, around this time, I mean, it's right around where we were talking about this, right after I had moved home. So, you know, a lot of flux. This is actually the last show we watched together.
Yes.
At Mike's. I don't know. I think I came back and maybe watched one like later when I wasn't living there. But this is the last of when I was in Connecticut living there.
Right.
And I moved home like probably a week after this or whatever, right around this time.
Yes. I remember everybody came and we got the trucks and moving out of that Avalon was a bitch. I do remember that.
It was. But
your house moving to the to Cornell was no problem. But
did you come here to help me move in?
Maybe I didn't. I feel like I did. Maybe I helped you unpack down the line. Maybe a couple weeks later, or maybe a month later, you had extra stuff. No, I think you had two teams.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think I think Gazzo. I think Gazzo came.
Oh, Rich was it? Because remember, we all slept on the floor in the apartment. I don't know if you slept over. You came the next day.
I think I might have come early.
We had like
morning.
No furniture. So like me, like my dad and my father-in-law stayed in a hotel, and then me, Rich. I don't know. It must have been Andy. I don't know. Like three or four of us slept on
no,
the floor.
No, tower.
The
I think definitely was on the Cornell end. I think. I thought so.
I don't know.
Anyway,
it was a few.
Moving
guys,
out of Avalon
so
sucked.
We slept on the floor. I remember that.
Yeah.
So I just moved home. So this one I watched there, and I started. We actually ordered them, you know, when I moved back. But again, this is the time I don't remember seeing them too many times over, and they're spotty. So we'll see. Also, this is really the first Raw pay per view since all the turnover. Because remember, the first one had all the combined rosters with SmackDown still and Vengeance. Yep. And then they haven't been on pay-per-view alone since then. So this is the first kind of reconfigured Raw show with new focus.
Right. Yeah. And I like, as we discussed tonight, you're going to see, I think, a lot of formulas that the creative was working on. I think a lot of it was old versus new. Because I think we saw a lot of shine on this show from the younger roster. But I think you saw, obviously, as we'll see, old timers kind of not put them in their place, but, you know, took the win, but made them look pretty good. And I think the opener's like that. I think one of the big main event matches later in the show was like that. And I think you see it a little less on SmackDown, because SmackDown, as we've talked about all year, had its own roster issues. And then they're going to have a huge roster issue in like a month and a half. But anyway, let's dive in. September 18th. 2005, live from the Ford Center in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. So, JR, new building, new city, new state, new everything. With this being, here's a little my usual venue location junkieism. With this being Oklahoma's debut pay-per-view, it becomes, I don't know if you have the thing in front of you, but
I do.
Oh, never mind then. It becomes the 35th different U.S. state. Mm-hmm. To hold a WWE pay-per-view at that moment in time. It's also the second straight year that a state's first pay-per-view was an Unforgiven. Because if you remember, JR, last year, Unforgiven 04 was in Portland, which was Oregon's debut pay-per-view. So back-to-back Unforgivens christen new states. Give us a little history, obviously. It's a brand-new building of the, I think, relatively new at that time, Ford Center.
Opened June 8th, 02, so a few years old at this point. Broke ground May 11th, 99, so I'm constructing that thing for a while.
Yeah,
Let's see, holds, WWE specifically called out on here, 14708 is the attendance there. Okay. Of course, now known as the Chesapeake Energy Arena, home to the Oklahoma City Thunder since 2008. Was home to the Hornets for 2 years when they lived there before moving to New Orleans. Oklahoma City Blazers of the CHL for 7 years, and the Oklahoma City Yard Dogs for 5 years, the AF2.
Yes.
And I remember this was a big deal. Jim Ross pimping the hell out of this show.
Yeah.
This is the first one in Oklahoma. I remember he did a big party or something the night before. You could go to his restaurant, and remember he had like some kind of big event there.
Yes, and I believe.
Flair?
I believe because they were in the crowd, I thought he introduced ZZ Top at some point that weekend. I don't know if it was two different events.
Right.
Because Coach and King mention it because Billy Gibbons and the other long-haired dude, Dusty Hill, I think, they were front row like they sometimes are for most pay-per-views. And you'll see them on and off for the rest of eternity, you know, for the rest of the timeline. But yeah, something big that weekend. And Oklahoma played. I think he was at Memorial Stadium that day before. I think they were playing UCLA. Mm-hmm. Your attendance that night, 8,000. Obviously, most of the seats cut by the set. Your buy rate, 0.56.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Secondary show, what are you going to do? Post-SummerSlam, you know, the usual fall doldrums, NFL season starts. And your announcers, and I was wrong, JR. I need to correct myself because I thought they were done in the catacombs, but incorrect. They are back in the catacombs still because Bischoff is still the boss. So back near the ramp, good old JR, Jim Ross, Jerry the King Lawler, and the coach, Jonathan Coachman.
Right, yeah, I don't think they moved back until the switch.
Yeah. Time now for our Sutton Report. And before we do that, JR, we, of course, would like to send our condolences to our researcher. His nan passed away over the weekend, his grandmother. So we'd like to send our condolences to the Sutton family for Nan passing away.
Yep. Best wishes to Stephen getting through everything. Yes. We're with you. So if you need anything, let us know. And thank you for your hard efforts to help us put the vaults on each and every other week.
So and he worked hard. He did say to me over the weekend and last week he was trying to get his mind off the impending what would happen, sadly. So what do we got?
All right. So do you remember the song?
I know the band. The band was the Grammy Award winning super mega band Taproot.
Yes. I don't think they would be.
I think this would not be the last time that they would be the official song of something. But I don't remember the name of the song. Crying.
Yep. Calling was the name. Okay. WWE champion still John Cena, Intercontinental champion still Carlito, tag team champion still Hurricane and Rosie, and the women's champion still Trish Stratus. So no changes there since the last time we've seen them.
I don't think it's a sponsor, huh? I think it's shop.com or something. So. Yeah.
Raw, 642 episodes, Heat 366. We've had 65 impacts. On 9/9, the first hour of SmackDown was streamed on WWE.com due to the Shelter from the Storm Hurricane Benefit concert that drew approximately $30 million. So.
Oh, okay.
SmackDown was moved for an hour. TNA, we saw Unbreakable on 9/11, main evented by AJ Styles, defeating Christopher Daniels and Samoa Joe to capture the X title. Raven over Rhino under Raven's Rule, The Naturals over America's Most Wanted, and Bobby Roode, Jeff Hardy, and then a bunch of crap on the other card. So, ROH, a Glory by Honor 4, Bryan Danielson returned to the promotion, became the seventh champion when he defeated James Gibson. AJ Styles retained the rights to the Styles Clash over Jimmy Rave. And on Unforgiven's official heat, we saw Rob Conway over to Jiri. And then that's it. We got a couple debuts in here, too, we'll touch on.
Mm-hmm. All right. And as you said, Heat, Robert Conway. Mm-hmm. All right. Let's dive in.
Robert.
And we'll talk about when he starts becoming a more of a single star, the iconic entrance theme.
Look at me.
All right, let's dive in. We have three title matches on this evening, JR. God, it was the last time we heard AG. Good grief.
I think it wasn't that long ago.
It wasn't. We haven't heard it this calendar year, right?
No. I feel like we just heard it.
Let's see. Near's Revolution.
I don't know.
Let's see. Near's Revolution. No.
That's right. We don't have to figure it out. All right.
Rumble, no.
Set us up.
Nah, definitely not in 2005. Sometime in 2004. Maybe.
He didn't wrestle like Backlash or anything? I guess not.
I don't think so. I think it might be exactly 1 year because wasn't Unforgiven 2004 him and Batista against Benoit and Regal?
Yeah, sounds right.
That might be. So it's been exactly 1 year since Andy Gibb has come out of his coke-filled haze and sang the song for me. All right.
We're going to hear it a lot coming up. So
there's going to be a lot of montages involving him coming up. All right. So the first of three championship matches, JR, and he has not had a title shot of any singles singles capacity in quite a while. So how do we get to this point?
Sorry, I was coughing up a lung. On 8/22, Ric Flair joined Carlito in his cabana. They had an entertaining back and forth with Carlito telling Flair he had never lost his IC title, let alone 16 times, as Flair had done with his world titles. And Flair talked about Carlito's father, Carlos. Carlito would spit his apple in Flair's face, but Flair beat him down to end the segment. The next week, Flair saved Shawn Michaels from an attack by Carlito and Chris Masters, so Eric Bischoff set up a tag match. Before the match happened, a crew member brought Shawn over to a bloodied and assaulted Flair. Flair was taken to the hospital, but did return to help Michaels in what had to be made into a handicap match. Flair would tag in, but Masters hooked him in the master lock, and he passed out, thanks to the loss of blood from earlier. A 9-5, Carlito admitted that he put Flair in the hospital, and that brought an enraged Flair out to the cabana looking for revenge. Flair beat Carlito all around the ring and tossed him to the floor and then threw a bucket of apples at him. Finally, a 9-12, Carlito assaulted Flair during a match with Masters and only relented when Michaels made the save.
Yep.
You want to mention our other fact there?
And our other fact, in terms of championships, the last time Flair went for a secondary singles title was a little under 9 years ago, actually a little over 9 years ago, when he faced Conan for the World Championship Wrestling United States title on a very infamous show, Bash at the Beach, 1996.
So we should say it's his first title reign, not the first time he's gone for a title.
Well, yeah, first secondary titles,
yep.
Single title. Yep. Yeah. And of course, that wasn't what was really memorable about 1996 Bash at the Beach, of course. We got a little undercard that people forgot about. I was kind of pumped. It was kind of neat, you know, something you hadn't seen in a long time. And
yeah, and if
just Flair something to do.
It felt to me like it was going to be, I don't know, I thought it was just be Carlito like cheating to win. Because the way they had presented Flair, you never really thought, they weren't going to put the IC belt on him. Because that belt at that time still felt a little bit like, you know, prepping younger guys. I don't know. It didn't feel like a title to slap on an old dude at this point. But Carlito started disrespecting him, and Flair had basically turned face with Hunter gone. In an interesting spot for him to drop to the mid-card, kind of get active again, which, we, like you mentioned, I guess we hadn't seen in a while, since at least the tag stuff with Batista. So feeling out to start with Flair doing basic arm work. And, by the way, wasn't he in the Rumble? Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. I think we might have played it there.
He might have been in the Rumble, yeah.
Yeah, because didn't he fake out Batista? Wasn't that this year, 05?
Well, he faked out Batista, but that was after the Rumble. That was after Mania.
No. Remember, they were working together, and then he chopped him. Or was that 04? What am I thinking of? Was the Rumble? Remember, they were working together, and then Flair tried to throw him out. And then, like, Batista laughed at him and threw him out.
That might have been 04.
Do you remember what I'm talking about, though?
Yeah, I do. I do remember.
They started double-teaming, and then Flair, like, tricks him and tries to throw him out, and Batista just, like, laughs at him.
At him and tosses him. I have a feeling that's 04. But while you're doing your analysis, I'll double check.
So, anyway, we get some feeling out. Flair works the arm. Carlito's a little bit arrogant, mocking Flair. Carlito punches away and builds some momentum until Flair lands an eye poke and some chops. Carlito dumps Flair to the floor and runs him to the post. And the story here is all about Flair getting one shot at a win, that he's still good enough to win one match. So that's the story they tell in commentary, that he may not be better than Carlito at this point, but he's good enough to win a match. Flair keeps trying to chop into some comebacks. Carlito shoves him down and punches away. Very strike-heavy match here. Flair comes back with more chops and a knee to the head. Flair hits a clothesline off the top, and the crowd goes nuts, and he celebrates. And that was funny because they made a big deal about him actually landing a move off the top. And then he tries it again, but Carlito dropkicks him this time.
Right.
Flair catches Carlito with a punch when he had an apple in his mouth, and he starts choking. Knocks him down, and then he gets to figure four as Carlito's choking. And again, this shocked me, but the crowd goes nuts. And it was a really cool moment that JR is going crazy. A good surprise. Carlito losing the belt was shocking. Match is very basic and bland, but the finish and post-match Flair promo made it all worth it. But I don't know. I don't get why he had a name drop Hunter not being there. Like, they built him up as this face in this cool moment, and then, like, he squeezes him in. It felt like a little forced.
I finish your point, and I'll give my opinion on that. Go ahead.
And then he promises to party in OKC all night long, and he pulls some girls out of the crowd. But
yes.
Just him being like, the only thing is, you know, Triple H isn't here, the greatest, et cetera. It felt really forced, you know what I mean?
He was number 30 in this year's Rumble, but Edge eliminated him. So maybe it was a year before with the whole Batista thing.
Okay.
But he was in this Rumble
okay. This
year.
I thought he was, so I knew we played the song at least.
Yeah, so he was in the Rumble at 30, but he definitely was not in anything other than that. So, I enjoyed this match. The storytelling was good. Carlito trying to cheat himself through, and you know, obviously Flair facing somebody younger than him, better shape than him, etc. And
it had to be this one because Flair's not in. He's not in the 04 Rumble. It either's Batista.
All right, so it had to be
because they were in the undercard. Yeah. They defended the tag titles. So maybe Edge just maybe Batista just like blocked him, and then Edge eliminated him.
Yeah, that's entirely possible. And it was obviously late in the
Right. It was towards the end because they were working together, and then everyone, because Batista hadn't turned yet, so they were working together, and then Flair, like, remember he just like struts and then grabs Batista's head and tries to throw him out, and Batista doesn't even move.
I'm
pretty sure that was 05.
Yeah, I think it had to have been that one. Yeah, it had to have been this year's one.
Yeah.
Anyway. But a great. I enjoy this match a lot. I think Batista. Now I got him in my head. I think Flair did a great job of selling for Carlito and helped him tell a great story. And again, I think this was a good match of old versus new. And was I shocked Flair won? A little bit, but with Triple H gone for the time being, and obviously Evolution's gone, Orton's on the other show, and Batista, well, actually both guys are on the other show. I think that this was a good moment for Flair. You know, he doesn't do a lot of this very often, particularly as a babyface now. So I think that it was a big moment for Flair, and I think Carlito, I don't think it hurts him.
No, I don't think it hurt him.
This might be just a token reign. Yeah, he may get it back. And I think the Triple H moment, I think that was probably meant to lead into what they were going to do in a few weeks.
I know, but it just felt like it was such a feel. Like, why not have him cut a promo before and say it? You know what I mean? Like, I'm going after the title here tonight, and, you know, I wish my friend was going to be here listening. I don't know. It's such a feel-good moment. The crowd's going nuts. He's celebrating. We're going to party. And then, like, he has to stop and remind us about Triple H. I just felt pointless. It was a very poochy moment that we didn't.
Yeah, know. It probably could have gone. I agree with you in that instance. It probably could have gone.
Or just the next night.
On heat or something. Yeah.
Just didn't need it there. Yeah. But I didn't really. I thought the match was kind of blah. I don't know. Like, it was just a lot of strikes. I mean, if it wasn't for the crowd being so into Flair, it probably would have been even trashier. But the finish was cool with him choking on the apple and then tapping up to the figure four. And again, it surprised me big time.
Yeah, it stunned me as well because Carlito, you know, had a decent run going. And I guess I was a little shocked that if Shelton Benjamin was not going to win it back, you figured Carlito was going to hold it for a while till another young guy came in, but I guess they wanted to pop the crowd and give, you know, new crowd, new building. You know, maybe they want to do something special to kick the show off.
No,
so.
I get why they did it, and you know, it makes sense. But it just at the time was a upset. So I didn't really see it coming with the way Flair had been handled as an in ring guy. That's all.
Yeah,
but no, it was a cool moment. I mean, looking back, I think it was fine. Like, fine call.
Yeah. I mean, we don't know how long he was going to hold it, but, yeah. And I think the fun thing with him, going in right after the match, he goes back to the limo with these women and throws back about 60 Viagra
we'll touch on those as we,
that story continues as we move along. So there you go. Ric Flair for the first time in his career is the Intercontinental Champion. Obviously he was, you know, when he was here the first time. Too high up the card. Yes. He's too busy being WWE champion at that time. So, but it's, you know, solid match, a little under 12 minutes, and definitely an upset. I don't think anybody totally expected it. And we'll see what Carlito goes from here, if he gets it back or not. But Ric Flair is your new Intercontinental Champion.
So backstage, Lita's prepping Edge and being a real bitch about Hardy while she's doing it. Talks about how they were together when Matt would call them both while injured. Just, I don't know. We kind of get the story at this point. There's enough heat. Like, do we really need this? You know what I mean? Remember when we were banging and he called me and then you? I don't know. It felt a little much at that point.
Yeah, they were really trying to, like, throw these storylines way over the top, even though we kind of already knew that they were, you know, going on and...
Right. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's good heat building. Like, whatever. I get why they did it. It felt a little mean. That's all.
Yeah.
But whatever. They haven't really been nice to Hardy since he's been back anyway. So.
Yeah, exactly. I think they understood the point. Next up, big return and a tag match. We had some, like, heel turn action and stuff throughout this whole thing. So, little diva tag action, including our returning women's champion. Give us the background, JR.
Yeah, Tori Wilson and Candice Michelle moved over to Raw and turned heel by attacking the 2005 Diva Search winner Ashley Massaro on the 8/22 Raw. Ashley got some backup on 9/12 in the form of the returning women's champion Trish Stratus, who had been out since the splash she received from Viscera back at Backlash. In reality, she had been recovering from a herniated disc in her back. And, of course, Ashley was a model hailing from New York that had won the Miss Hawaiian Tropic in 2002. In 2005, she was brought in to compete in the Diva Search, and she ended up winning. And then, well, she'll be around for a little bit, and then we move on to some interesting lines of work. Vince's Devils, as they were called, Tori Wilson and Candice Michelle and Victoria, were formed on 8/22 when Candice and Tori debuted, attacked Ashley, and the next week they recruited Victoria, solidifying their heel group and dedicated to Vince McMahon, of course, a spoof on Charlie's Angels.
Vince's yes, and
Devils.
And, of course, Tori started carrying Fifi, Pepe, whatever the hell she named the dog, if the dog even had a name.
I don't know if it did.
I don't know if it did either.
Had a little fucking McGinn dog in her purse.
Yes, a little McGinn dog.
Stupid shirt.
So here we go. So a little tag match action. Yeah, a little tag action. And our women's champion is back.
And a rare heel turn for Tori. It's kind of weird. Victoria's the work of the group, obviously. And they let her do so. Trish back from injury. She's now a face. Remember, she was a heel, but just kind of dissipated and now would pretty much be a face for the rest of her run here. And it was hard. You know, I, as great as she was as a heel, and it really took her up a notch, it's, I think it ran its course in many ways. Like, if, I think it's fine that she comes back, it's a big pop, and they just leave her as a face. They didn't try and turn her back heel at this point.
Right.
So I was fine with that. Ashley's first pay-per-view, as we mentioned, Trish, you know, looking super hot. And not even just keeping her as a face, but just setting her up as, like, the ace of the division, the leader of the division as a face makes sense as well. So, Coach keeps tweaking JR about Oklahoma football. So, I guess whatever game you mentioned before, they must have lost because he was all over them.
Yes, they lost to UCLA the day before.
Yep. There you go. So, Victoria and Trish start off with Victoria grounding and working the neck. Trish gets fired up and comes back with a flurry of punches and tags in Ashley, who's for some reason wearing a hat in the ring. She hits a clothesline and then does some weird gymnastics into a dropkick for two, but gets shoved to the floor. Candice chokes her on the floor. Victoria works a chin lock and then tags in Tori. Victoria quickly comes back and lands some stiff knees to the face and then hooks on a face lock. Victoria's offense made sense against a rookie where she's not really like doing anything crazy. She's just grinding Ashley down. And then the crowd starts to rally Ashley and, you know, you kind of think, oh, are they behind her? Or, nope, they're probably just really into Trish. So, by proxy, they're into Ashley here. Trish finally gets a tag and smacks around Victoria before knocking Tori to the floor. Trish hits all her classics and is just on fire, gets a spine buster, but Candice ties up the ref. Trish continues to battle all three of them and then hits Victoria with a chick kick for the win. I thought it was a solid match. I thought Victoria worked hard. Trish did well. The crowd was into it. It was a strong finish with Trish asserting her dominance. You know, it's good to have her back, and I'm fine with her winning this the way she did because they need to get reestablished. Like, it's good. Just let her get her pop, let her get her win, and get back on a roll.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think it was a good stage for Ashley to kind of, you know, assert herself as the second annual Diva Search winner. The Devils were, you know, a fun concept and kind of a change of pace for Tori. You know, she's been a babyface for so long, you know, the last 4 years, I guess, since she came into the from the invasion. Ashley's got a lot of work to do. She had a couple of moves. There was like a – she had like a it was actually kind of a weird – it was like a flip or something, like some kind of flip, and she – flipped over Victoria and then like a sit up drop kick or something weird.
I don't know. She just wasn't smooth at all.
she needed some help. This match was a lot longer than I thought. I mean, it was over 7 minutes, but obviously most of it was Trish, and Trish looked fine. Kind of wrestling.
The thing I don't get, like with Ashley and even with Christy, and well, they didn't do it as much with Christy, but a little bit is like. Did they have that much faith that these girls could just go out there and work these matches? Like, I feel like they weren't getting much training. Like, when did she win the contest?
It had to have been maybe within that last month.
Right? I mean, it wasn't that far. August 15th, she was the winner. And she's on pay-per-view, like, a month later. Like, what? I don't get it. I mean, do they really feel like if they don't capitalize that quickly that she's going to be forgotten? I don't know. Like, why not just do training updates or something? It seemed really rushed to put her in the ring on a pay-per-view match.
Right.
I mean, I could see if she was like an indie worker or something or had at least trained at some point. But to strictly come out of the, you know, freaking Hawaiian tropics and then go work, you know, on a pay-per-view tag match just felt weird to me. It was just, it felt like they really just rushed her out there, and it's kind of dangerous too.
I agree.
That said, and I kind of like the match. I didn't think it was that bad, but
no, I didn't think it was bad.
To do with her.
Yeah, no, I didn't. It wasn't that bad, and I mean, she didn't do that much. I mean, Trish did a lot of the work, you know, to get herself back in shape. You know, she'd been gone since, you know, since early May, so she needed, you know, obviously she needed to be, and she was dealing with, you know, other than Victoria, mm-hmm. it was pretty much. I mean, not that Tori's a bad worker, but Tori's not on the level of either Victoria or Trish. So it was almost like Trish and Victoria were the workhorses, Tori and Ashley were the kind of the pseudo eye candy, and there was kind of a balance there, and Trish and Victoria got a lot of the, you know, and obviously they're the ones that ended the match as she chick kicked Victoria. So nothing too ridiculously offensive, but you're right. I think you know, Ashley could probably have used a few more months of work and maybe, you know, gone back to it at Survivor Series or something. Maybe shoot part of a bigger team or something to kind of help her get her feet wet. But like you said, having said that, the match isn't, you know, it's not like that Jackie Gatum match or whatever with JBL. It wasn't that unwatchable. But it was evident that she still had a lot of work to do. So, but Trish Stratus returns, our women's champion. I guess the 30-day rule doesn't apply to her. And her and Ashley defeat Tori and Victoria. And Candice was looking, oh my God, ridiculously hot. So next up, a match that probably would have been on Raw if this was a dual pay-per-view. But since it was brand only, kind of needed it. Tell us what it is and how we got here.
It is, hang on one sec, sorry. Lost my spots. The match itself, or are we going backstage first? I got a backstage thing.
Oh, we have a backstage? I'll go backstage, yeah.
So we go backstage to where Ric Flair is all gross and sweaty and old, and he brings the women back to the limo to party. And, you know, it, in many ways it's really nasty, like, that these young, hot women, I know it's Flair and his rep, but he's literally just, like, sweaty and nasty and his gut and thin hair. I don't know, just like what would make them actually want to go bang this guy in the limo. But it's funny because he sneaks in some Viagra, takes one, and then he counts the women and pops another. So a funny skit, and I like, as they go along, they're funny, but the premise is pretty nasty and on its own right.
He could have at least showered first. I mean, yeah. The old Flair would have put his nice suit on before. But now, of course, he has no money. So,
all right. So here's an interesting storyline that some Nation members may enjoy. But as 2005 rolled along, it was revealed that Sinsky had a foot fetish. On 8/22, he attempted to lick Maria's feet, but Big Show interjected and stuck his foot in the way to stop him. He told Sinsky to beat it and told Maria to be more careful. Later that night, Show defeated Sinsky by count out when Gene left the ring. The next week, Show was battling two jobbers in a handicap match, and Sinsky came out to start a fight. Sinsky was able to grab the ring bell and knock Show out with it. And on 9/5, Sinsky was about to nail Matt Hardy with the bell, but Show made the save. On 9/12, Sinsky teamed with Edge to defeat Show and Hardy. So Sinsky's still hanging around after his big Kane feud has really ended here now. Mm-hmm. Show's all smiles. He comes and says hi to ZZ Top, like you mentioned before. Sinsky's still hanging around as a Haas heel. And I thought it was a decent little feud, kind of gives Show a big guy to face for once, you know, instead of being the only big guy. So Show attacks off the bell. He chucks Sinsky across the ring a couple times. Big Show chokes him with his boot and then fetches Sinsky as he tries to escape. Back inside, Show lands a monster chop. On the floor, Sinsky shoves Big Show into the post to take over and then works the shoulder. Big Show tries for a choke slam, but Sinsky slips free and dodges the charge. Sinsky hits a cool-looking back suplex for near fall in a good spot. Sinsky goes back to the shoulder. Big Show nips up and then unloads the clotheslines in an avalanche in the corner. Show hits the choke slam and gets the win. Show then hits Sinsky with the bell for his revenge afterwards. And I thought this is a surprisingly feisty little match. The crowd is still red hot, and they were into the whole thing. And Sinsky, I think he's solid as an energetic monster heel. Like, he doesn't need to really win. He's got a decent look. We already know he's an asshole because he killed a, you know, baby. So he's established as a prick, and we know he's dangerous due to the stuff he did to Kane. So I think he's a good guy to have around at this point. Just can stick in matches and little feuds like this, and then you let the face beat him, and you move along. And I don't know. He has good energy in the ring and hustles, and Show kept with him. So I kind of like this one.
Mm.
And it wasn't too long. It didn't, like, overstay its welcome, you know?
No, it was a little over 6 minutes, and it was fine. I mean, it was a good mid-card feud to fill a gap and, you know, keep Big Show looking, you know, pretty good on camera, and Sinitsky, you know, weird as usual. But, oh, my God, what was with the back knee? Good grief. Snitsky's just gross. he's just gross.
He's like Rotella if he ever juiced.
That, yes.
Snitsky.
No, you know, no hair, weird goatee, misshapen. Definitely. It's just absolutely gross. But
we may need a greenhouse Photoshop of Rotella's face on Snitsky's body,
on Snitsky's
or Snitsky's face on Rotella's body if it was the opposite.
Yes.
Snitsky gave up on ever any kind of physical fitness in any way.
Or grooming. it's just so – he was just gross. And the match itself is fine, though. Two power guys. Nothing really earth-shattering. It was okay.
Although Snitsky with Matt's wife would be pretty funny just due to the height difference.
It would be very interesting. It would be a very unique visual. But yeah, I mean, it was nothing crazy. And then Big Show comes back and, you know, obviously marks it by whacking him with the bell twice. So Big Show wins. You know, nothing crazy. Typical, you know, mid-card Raw power feud. Nothing nuts.
I didn't mean to break my Mickey Mouse thermos. It wasn't my fault.
It wasn't my fault. Who stole my volume 3 of my SpongeBob SquarePants set? Do we go backstage again or no? Do we have anything in between here?
Yes, Flair is still partying, still going at it.
Is this the one where there was steam coming out of the?
I think so. Yeah.
Limo, and then the girl, and then one of the cougs walk out, come out of the.
I don't
limo.
Think they were even cougars, were they? They were kind of like.
No, they were kind of young. I guess they were kind of young, and she's got Flair's robe on, and then she's like taking it off, and it's bizarre.
You're gonna have to be your daughter. Lots of hype and build for Masters and Michaels. Like, I thought that match was coming up next because they show the, like, all
yeah,
the
they
hype
did a clip here. Yeah, yeah.
And then we don't. So they really make it like it was a big time match.
Yeah, definitely. Next up, one of the more, I don't know if you could say memorable or forgotten gimmicks of all time that would last just pretty much this pay per view match. And then
Sugar Tits Lure.
A little bit after this. Yeah. Yes, no. No, that's forever, whether forgotten or not, but it's forever. All right. Yeah. What do we do here?
I wake up every morning, can't wait to embrace the day. I take my coffee by the pool.
On June 30th, Chavo Guerrero was traded to Raw at the tail end of the draft. Prior to leaving SmackDown, he was assaulted by the Mexicools. Upon arriving at Raw, Chavo denounced his Mexican and family heritage, embraced the lifestyles of a white American suburbanite, and changed his name to Kerwin White. He began driving to the ring in a golf cart, dyed his hair blonde, and was escorted to the ring by the music. That sounded like it was left over from a hidden Frank Sinatra album. That very may well been. As the weeks went along, Kerwin took some subtle jabs at African-Americans, drawing the ire of Shelton Benjamin. On 9/5, Kerwin cost Shelton a match against Rob Conway. The next week, Kerwin and Shelton faced off in a match. Shelton won by DQ, and Kerwin hit him with his golf club. The Kerwin White name, of course, is a rib on longtime director Kerwin Silfies.
Yes, he's been around forever.
I'm clean inside. Each day
So, as our resident WAP, Scott, what...
what are you, Polish?
As our resident Dago... What is it? We can use these. See, it's rare that we can use these racist terms. We were making fun of ourselves. as the big Dago in the house, what is the is that an actual Sinatra song or is that like a knockoff?
No, that's got to be a knockoff. I don't think that's a real song. No, it sounded like him singing though. But no, I don't think
Dago enough these days.
They go too far. Oh, I thought you were going to actually ask me something.
No, that was it.
Oh, so what do you think of the macaroni tonight? Hey, oh, a little sausage and peppers. this was hilarious.
I mean, it sounds just like him.
Yeah, it does sound just like him. But I mean, I know a lot of Frank, and I don't. That didn't. Maybe it was. I don't know.
Excuse
maybe they decided
Midwest.
To pay for it.
I know a lot about Frank.
Frank's in the limo with Flair right now.
It was inspired by the Frank Sinatra song, I've Got My Love to Keep Me Warm.
Hmm.
But I guess it's not actually by Frank.
Yeah. Sounds like him, though. Pretty good. Yeah, I don't know. It's whoever's singing it, it is very close, I will say. Mm-hmm. But definitely not him. Sure, they didn't pay for that. If Vince is going to pay for a Frank song, he's not going to pay for some forgotten album cut. He's going to pay for like My Way or New York, New York or something.
Yeah, it looks like he's attributed to Jim Johnston. So,
Yeah, Summer Wind. The summer wind is in again.
Anyway. So there you go. What did you think? Yeah. I mean, it was definitely pretty racist, the idea.
It was dopey. It was dopey.
I mean, I liked the, like, I don't like the thinking behind it, but I thought, like, this is the most interesting Chavo's been since, you know, he was woodchipping Pepe and all that stuff. Like,
yes.
Because he's been so friggin' bland.
Yeah.
Well, Chavo Classic was good. Since then, anyway, he's been bland. But I thought this really, I don't know, like, I thought he took to this pretty well. I like the idea of it, the golf cart and the dyed hair and the music, and he played it up well.
Khaki shorts.
Right. I mean, I don't know where it was headed, what the payoff is. Obviously, it ends prematurely, but the other thing, you know, if you notice, too, just juiced out of his mind here, just huge.
Yeah. Yeah, he was.
This is what I always think of when I think of Kerwin White, is just how gassed he was. His head was enormous.
Mm-hmm.
So again, funny but very racist gimmick. Good use of the theme and the entrance, and Chavo bought into it. JR rips him bad for ditching his heritage. Stepped down for Shelton out of the IC title mix, but at least still gets a pay-per-view match here. Raw digging into the depth big time for this show. Shelton yanks Kerwin to the floor to start and then beats him around, burying a knee to the gut. Crowd has finally cooled off by this point now. They've been hot right up until this point. Kerwin goes to a knee to cut down his speed, an aerial attack. Loud Chavo sucks chance as he meanders around through his offense. That hasn't changed. Chavo, coach, has been a good troll heel on commentary, by the way. I thought that's really been missing on these Raw pay-per-views with King not really being a heel. I thought he's been pretty good on this. I thought he was good at SummerSlam and here, being the guy that kind of nudges them along from a heel perspective. Have you liked Coach on these shows?
I have. Some matches he's a little over the top. But it's okay to have kind of a dopey heel, which is what he is. So
but
other
I think
times
he's better
he's not
here.
Too bad.
But he's better here than he was, like when he first did this. Whenever it was, like 03, 04-ish, a little bit when he was like just a Bischoff yes man in those early ones. Remember?
Right.
I think here he's just more of a, you know, he backs Bischoff and stuff, but he's less agenda driven, just more of a, you know, D-bag heel. Whereas in those early ones, it was all about like pushing the Bischoff agenda in commentary. I think he's like, you know, a Twitter troll to JR. Like that's what he plays. So I liked it. More basic leg work. Shelton hits a cool spot, lands on one leg off a monkey flip, but Kerwin was right back on a bland attack. Shelton with a one-legged comeback, but he's just gone by this point. Kerwin hits a superplex for a two count and it goes to a half crab. Shelton breaks free. Kerwin grabs his club, but Shelton dodges and hits a T-bone for the win. I thought this match was super boring. The crowd was out of it. The finish was cool. And Shelton needed the win, but I think Kerwin's already a dead end, and the showing did not help. I mean, I don't know what has happened to him. I guess he felt like he couldn't, you know, fly around because of the gimmick changed anymore. Couldn't lucha it up, but he's just gotten so boring, Chavo. And this match did no favors for a guy that's been red hot in Shelton.
Yeah, I mean, again, Shelton got phased out of the IC title storyline to be the guy that in this, but yeah, I mean, Chavo's just a ball of you know, Nandrolone or whatever, but I mean, yeah, I don't know
like
whether
Warlord's younger brother.
Like, yeah, it does. Like his traps are all gnarled and it just looks, he's all misshapen.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's funny you mentioned the lucha part, because I don't know if he did that intentionally. For the gimmick change,
completely,
but
shuts it down. He's just like, yeah, mat work, and it's boring.
It's dull with the khaki shorts, and I don't know. It was a stinker. I feel bad for Shelton because he got pushed out of the IC title storyline so he could do this. I mean, that's pretty weak. Let's move on. There's really not much more to say. It's 8 minutes. We're not going to get back because next up is... Yes, that you can see. I only hang out with a privileged few. Society's elite with blood that's blue. Oh. Might as well enjoy it tonight, since you're never going to play it again.
I'm on the juice.
He didn't have any back knee, but yeah, his head looked like a...
that needle and jam it into my ass. I never thought my traps could be this big.
This tight, my head looks like a misshapen pumpkin. It wasn't quite Barry Bonds or, you know, but it was pretty misshapen.
Bonds was still hanging around at this point, wasn't he?
06? Oh, yeah.
OBP of like 3,000 or whatever.
Yeah. And
every time.
When did he break the, when did he hit 757 or whatever the fuck it was? 756? Was that this year? You're at? No. I think he'd already done it.
He's been retired.
Right? Because he's
like,
gone.
It could have been 2015. You said this year.
When did he? This is his fourth. This is fourth year on the ballot. This was his fourth year.
Yeah.
So 2000.
Right now, hang on. Baseball. So our friends at Baseball Reference.
Oh, great site.
Barry Lamar, 2007 was his last year.
Yeah, so he had probably already broken the record. Unless this was the year he had broken the record.
So he went, and this is what was absurd. Because remember, he got kind of blackballed, and like a lot of people were pissed because they weren't offering him deals, and he felt like he kind of got forced out of the league. But, you know, his last year, he still played in 126 games,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, isn't bad for a guy.
No, not at all. No, not at all. Right.
Hit 28 home runs, 66 RBI. Still walked 132 times, OBP of 480, OPS 1.045. Like, I mean, still ridiculous numbers. You're telling me you couldn't have won a DH for another couple of years for a team in the AL?
I thought that was going to happen. I remember at the end of I could have sworn just for like, you know, like a media splash purpose that I thought the
not even a media splash. It was a legit bat still. You could have step right into some of those lineups in that year. Are you telling the Indians like couldn't use another bat like him? You know,
I thought the Yankees were going to sign him.
No, they had enough going. I mean, they could have, I guess, at that
they
point.
They didn't have gassed up.
Well, I mean, Torrey just, I don't know. I don't think they were going to take the chance, but you're talking about a team like in Oakland or, you know, even Detroit at the time that, like teams that were starting to make the climb, you know, couldn't have used his bat.
Right. Yeah. Well, he obviously hit it.
Tampa, you know, Tampa was heating up. Like, they could have signed him for a year.
He had to have hit it in 07 then, because he finished with 762, so he only finished 7 home runs over the limit. So, yeah, it obviously was the following year. Yeah, it had to have been the following year. Yeah, I don't know.
2 years.
But
we're in 05 now. 05 was the year he was hurt. He only played 14 games.
Oh, okay, so he must have done it in 07 then, if he was.
He did, I'm telling you.
Oh, okay.
28 home runs. If he only broke it by 7, he had to have done it in 07.
Yeah, and then...
And he was an all-star there, too, still.
Yeah, and he this year he got 40. Him and Clemens both went up almost 10%.
Four straight MVPs, huh? 01 to 04.
Oh, yeah, he was a monster.
Can you imagine the son of a bitch is not in the Hall of Fame? He has 7 MVPs, and how many times was he was top two another 2 times?
Right.
Sixth rookie of the year. A ridiculous amount of all-stars, gold glove, silver slug. I mean, it's absurd. He's got he never won a title, right? That's the only thing he's missing?
No, 02 was the only year he went to the World Series.
I should have won that year. Anyway.
Well, he blew a, 5-run lead in Game 6? Or they were up, 6-0?
And the Angels were completely seventh clean, inning or something. So he definitely got his.
What's that?
I said, and all those Angels guys were completely clean. So
Nobody. No, the whole league was, which is why I still
think... And the Angels were ridiculous. I mean, they were juiced out of their minds that year.
Yeah, well, most of the AL teams... Well, I wouldn't say the Yankees were, but most of those teams...
No, everyone was. Every NL, too. What do you think that... In 1927, the NL? Depression era?
No, but the lineups in the National League were not nearly as bad as... I mean, I'm not saying they both weren't juiced. I'm just saying the AL lineups were just
McGuire,
more...
I mean, McGuire, Sosa, and Bonds, were they all in the, you know, international...
No, but there weren't any National League lineups that scored 1,000 runs. They were all the Indians, the Rangers,
you
Oakland.
Saw the antiquated pitcher-hitting bullshit behind it. Yeah, Barry Bonds, you know, you had friggin' Barry Zito batting after him, of course.
Pete Harnish.
I mean, you know, give me a break.
But no, which makes me think not only does Barry Bonds belong in the Hall of Fame, but so does Mike Mussina. Guy put up incredible numbers for, you know, years where all these lineups were ridiculously gassed. And, you know, the league ERA average was like 4.3, and his was like usually between 3.6 and 3.8, which was pretty good for that time. So he definitely belongs in the Hall of Fame. Anyway, that's a totally different topic, and we went on this whole thing with Senior a couple of evolutions ago. So, all right. Speaking of guys that are gassed, there was a guy in this match that I thought definitely was taking something, too. But this feud, of course, has its own juice. no pun intended.
Mm-hmm. Not too much more to talk about, though. I think we've covered a lot of it. On 8/22, Matt Hardy was taking on Rob Conway. Rob Conway's everywhere in this show. every segment on Raw. When Edge interfered, took him down and kicked the steel steps into the back of his head. The next week, Matt and Edge competed in a wild match. Matt had promised he would take Edge to hell with him, and he tries to do that when he gave Edge a side effect slam off the stage to the floor. Both men were barely moving as EMTs arrived and took them to the hospital. 2 weeks later, Edge pinned Hardy in a tag match after a Lita low blow. So if you remember, it's SummerSlam, where we last left off with these guys. Edge beat Hardy by ref stoppage when he dropped him on the post and he was gushing blood. So at some point, you got to figure Hardy's going to get a win, and this seemed to set them up inside a steel cage. So super personal, heated real angle continues. Lots of credit to Hardy doing this with Edge after what happened. I mean, he's, you know, stood up like a man and basically said, all right, let's make some money. You know, forget it. It's in the past. These two were due. They needed a good match after the hot brawl at SummerSlam, and Hardy needed a big moment badly. Lita, super hot as always. Big match feel as Edge is feeling more and more like a superstar by the day. All about Hardy's revenge here. It's a must-win for him. Stiff right hands back and forth. Edge tries to escape first, as that's his only goal, as Hardy just wants to maim him. Edge just wants to leave. Crowd was heated right back up. Hardy fully controls until Edge dodges him and smashes him into the cage. They tease a side effect off the top, but Edge rattles Hardy into the steel and then whiffs on a mistimed missile dropkick. Edge stays on the head, building off the previous attacks and injuries. Edge has great heat as he's smarmy and hamming it up. Hits a DDT and keeps punishing the head. Edge hits a buckle powerbomb, totally controlling the match, and then hits a top rope powerbomb, and things are looking bleak. And you start to wonder, is Hardy just going to get squashed again? just thrown out of the promotion at this point. Hardy stops an Edge escape and hits a snake eyes to gain a glimmer of hope, and then dodges a spear and spikes Edge into the corner, followed by a side effect, and the crowd is just really engrossed here. Lita gets involved and ties up the referee as Edge brings in the briefcase. And then we get an awesome moment with Edge tied in the ropes as Hardy just wails away and the crowd is just going nuts. Hardy slingshots into the cage and hits a bulldog on the briefcase. Edge is taking a beating, gets busted open. Lita distracts Matt but doesn't help. Hardy wants the ref to stop the match as he just keeps punching and kicking Edge over and over. And Edge is just gushing blood grossly all over the mat. And I like that callback to SummerSlam because he wants to win the same way, just kicking the shit out of his head. Yep. Hardy goes to the top to use the briefcase, but Edge shoves the ref and trips him up and then hits a spear, driving Matt into the cage. And that was a great false finish there, as everyone thought Hardy was going to escape, and they bring him back down. Edge tries to escape, but Hardy catches him, hits the top rope side effects. Nice payoff to the earlier tease. Lita comes in and breaks up the cover. Lita tries to use the briefcase, but Hardy stops her, hits a twist of fate to her to a massive pop, and then turns around to an Edge spear for a tremendous near fall. And I think many thought that was it, and Hardy was going to get screwed again, and that they set him up with Lita. Crowd is just rabid for Hardy here. Hardy catches Edge with a, once again, slams him off the steel into the mat. Instead of leaving, Hardy hits an epic leg drop off the top of the cage, and that was a perfect close to this whole thing. An amazing visual and bump. Crowd is just going nuts, and that was a tremendous finish. Super hot, hard-hitting cage match. Bloody, vicious, hate-fueled. One wild bump, that's all they needed. Couldn't have been booked any better, I didn't think, with Hardy getting his final revenge, Edge giving it his all to stay strong. Edge then crawls up the ramp covered in blood, refusing help. And I think this is a bit of a forgotten classic. I mean, the hate between them, the bits where Hardy just kicking him and punching him in the head as he's bleeding everywhere. The false finishes were great. That spear definitely felt like it was a finish with the way they've treated Hardy. And then the crowd is going nuts when Hardy wins. I thought this was great. I love this match.
I love this match, too, for a couple of reasons. One, the crowd heat. This Oklahoma City crowd's been fun all night if they've stayed engaged. And that continues into later in the show. I'm going to preface that. I'm going to really get into that later on with another match. What I liked about this match philosophically and in terms of psychology and the storytelling is that Matt's not going to get what he wants in the whole thing. He's not getting Lita back. So it's not fighting over a woman because it's not like Lita will go with the winner. She's a whore and that's pretty much that. So Matt just wants to, you know,
Matt's
just break
like,
a
piece
of
flesh.
Oh,
I'm the only idiot who puts Lita up in matches. Oh, Ed, is he going to do that?
Yeah.
I'm the only dipshit that started this whole thing.
Pretty much,
on the line in a match with Kane. Just you, Matt. You're the only one, buddy.
And we wonder why she was banging on the side. Duh. But he just wants to break a piece of flesh off of Edge. Edge, on the other hand, reminds me, and you described it in your analysis. He's pretty much Owen Hart at SummerSlam '94.
Yeah.
I'm not here for you. I don't need anything. I got what I want. I got your woman. So I'm getting the fuck out of here.
And he already beat the shit out of him once, too.
Yeah,
he's already humiliated him. So he just wants to get the hell out before Matt kills him.
This is all about you, Sunshine. This ain't nothing to me. I got your woman. I got my briefcase. You're the one that's, you know, crawling in the dark. So I'm gone. And that's what made the psychology of the match so great is that Matt just wanted to just beat him into submission. And Edge is like, you know, I don't need this. Mm-hmm. So that made great storytelling. And the crowd knew it. That Edge was just a big pussy who was just, you know, wanted to get out of there
But they didn't handle, I mean, he was a pussy in this scenario, but they booked him strong enough to where, like, for once that actually kind of didn't matter. He was trying to escape. So you didn't feel like, oh, Edge is just a, you know, softy. Like, because even when he.
Oh, exactly. Right.
When he starts to gain control, he doesn't just leave. He's like, oh, screw this. Now I'm going to beat the crap out of this guy. So,
right.
You know, they blend it well. But I thought, I mean, Hardy, you could tell. You could tell this felt good for him, a lot of what he was doing. And then leg drop off the top is just an epic moment on this show.
Yeah, he hits it hard. Yeah, he hits it flush. Yeah, no doubt. He hits it flush. And the crowd just, I mean, they do like eight different angles after the match ends. place is going nuts, flashbulbs everywhere. It's a big moment. It's probably the highlight moment of the show, and you know, maybe the highlight moment of the year. And you know, just single move. Yeah, this is a big deal and a big win for Matt. I don't think he'll ever get any better in his singles career again, and he'll win titles over the next, you know, 3 or 4 years. But I don't think he'll ever get it better than this. Because after this, like, all right, you got your win, asshole. Now it's time to...
It was a quick spike downwards, as we'll see.
Pretty much. After this, it was like, all right, you got what you wanted. You got your win.
And on this night, it felt like it was worth it, finally. Like, up until this point, it kind of didn't feel worth it for him to have come back. Like, he could have made more money by living off the anger on the indies at this point versus, like, the humiliation he's had. But on this night, it was like, okay, now I get why he did what he did. The SummerSlam thing makes sense. Yep. He got his big win here. It looked good. The crowd loves them. They're going nuts. Big things are ahead for Matt Hardy.
Yeah, exactly.
And we'll see.
And then it wasn't. But, yeah.
Well,
I mean, it
would
was,
be, but just not for a while.
Not for a while. He would eventually just kind of get his career lined up. But
he'll just get stabilized eventually. But
yeah, they pretty much told him here, all right, you'll get your big bloody match. You beat the shit out of him, and then that's it. And we got to move Edge along to things more important than your pride. Right. So... But Edge, I mean, even Matt, when Matt was walking down the ramp, even he looked like he was a little gassed.
No,
not as bad as Chavo's. Or,
no, Edge
Kerwin.
Was. I mean, they all were. Edge was. Everyone was at this point. It was.
Edge was not as. Edge wasn't as obvious.
Yeah, he was pretty cut. I mean, it's flowing very freely until, you know, they're running out of time. That changes pretty quick. But
Matt was definitely over the top. So. Matt Hardy finally gets his win in a really good cage match.
It's been a good time filler for Edge, too, though, because they needed to wait on him while they had other stuff going on, and this was like the perfect thing that came along for him to eat up these few months.
Exactly. They didn't want him involved in the main event. They needed other feuds to get out of the way first, and then they could focus on the briefcase. But for now, this was perfect. So Edge's, you know, Matt Hardy's pride and, you know, manhood saved the, the creative from having to make something up. So there you go. Matt Hardy gets the win. When was the last like straight up cage match? Probably been a while, huh? Been a while since we had just like a last like pay per view straight up cage match. We'll look it up. We don't need to get. We'll look it up during the break. Speaking of, why don't we take it? Good show so far.
Yeah, definitely better than I expected.
Yeah.
And we'll see if it continues. But.
Yeah, we have three matches left, two title matches, and a feud that actually, in a short 4 week span, actually was incredibly entertaining, and we'll see what kind of match it leads to. Mm-hmm. But first, words and coughing. Because...
You know, new break.
The dirt with the rest of the girls. That's why the lady is a tramp.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Main Event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. And relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series, led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We got sports covered too with the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., the Kings of Sport led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast and the TJ McClune Show. PTBN tackles pop culture and irreverence with Richard and the Mailman, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, and if you like a hybrid of all of this in list form, check out Jordan Duncan's Rank and File. All of these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tourneaments and more. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickerstaff, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the Reaction Shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We've got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Team's Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
Hey, this is Dr. Tom Pritchard, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast on the Place to Be Nation.
Nation, we're back checking out Unforgiven 2005. I'm going to quickly check out PlaceNation.com. A lot going on, as always, a plethora of podcasts at your auditory.
For your auditory. That's actually good. Auditory.
Auditory pleasure.
Auditory pleasure.
We had a new This Week in Wrestling. We had a new Between the Sheets looking at January 96 with our buddy Pete from Titans of Wrestling. New Sports Evolution with you, Cowboy and Senior, looking at the NFL playoffs, some boxing, some college hoops.
Yes, tough loss Saturday.
Seinfeld series rewatch continued on. We're inching closer, ever closer, to the end of season 6 with the beard, episode 16. Mm-hmm. New episode of Brain Buster back for the new year. So a lot of podcasts dropped today and over the weekend with a new Where the Big Boys Play as well, Clash 19. So Chad and Parv, we're back. We have a new 10 count from Ben Morse, counting down his top ECW wrestlers. Our Vintage World Refresh continued, Saturday Night's Main Event to kick off 1988. Mm-hmm. Great column by Chad Campbell, if you haven't read it yet, Wrestling with Expectations, kind of a story of a lifelong wrestling fan that's at a bit of a crossroads as a fan. So check that out. A little unsure where he's headed in 2016. Well worth the time to read that.
Yes, yes.
Our excellent network adventure rolled on, World Class 226-83, and of course that's each and every Wednesday. You can check those out.
Yep.
We had a new Stranger Things from Chris Jordan looking at January's greatest matches. We had a new NBA team podcast, all that there. And Scott, we haven't really talked about this. I covered it briefly on other shows, but last Sunday I attended the DDP Yoga Seminar. So went with my mother-in-law, and I've of course been doing, we talked about it a lot on here before in the past, been doing it for almost 4 years now. And it was an awesome experience. If DDP comes your way, I highly recommend checking it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It was very cordial. Walked around, introduced himself to everyone, make sure he took time to take pictures at the end with everyone. You know, like anything else, it's, you know, a little bit of a sales seminar, of course. He's pitching his app and he's pitching the program. But, you know, it makes sense. Like his story, told a great story. He talks about his life and his troubles growing up.
Yep.
And what he's done with Jake Roberts and Scott Hall. He talks about the Jake the Snake movie that kicked off last week on iTunes, the documentary.
Yes, yeah, I was looking at it on iTunes last week. I didn't watch it yet, but I got a gift card, so I was thinking of I was reading the description of it. It sounds like it's going to be really good.
Yeah, and he, you know, he spoke very highly of it, and the app looks amazing too. And then the workout was killer. I mean, it was almost like an hour 40 when you put together the breathing exercises and the kind of the, you know, going through the basics, and then the workout itself was about an hour 15. And I was hurting that night, like just not sore, but like just fatigued from a long, hard workout. So I really recommend it. It was worth the time, worth the trip in the rain down to Newport. I can't speak, you know, more highly of it. And I actually did a written piece for it on PlaceMediation.com. If you search just DDP Yoga, it'll come up, My Day with DDP. So I was really proud of the piece.
It's very good.
I got some love from Paige himself. Through one of the trainers I met, forwarded it his way, and he got a thanks from him. So, again, something I'm proud of if you want to check it out. Some other older pieces to check out, too. One I want to call attention to is Parv's Guide to David Bowie's Albums. We haven't talked yet since David Bowie passed away last week.
Yes.
That was a piece he wrote a couple years ago, a very extensive piece on David Bowie's albums, and worth checking out if you're a fan and you had missed it. Be sure to go back and revisit that as well. So
a
couple of
tough,
pieces.
Tough couple
back.
Weeks.
Yeah, a lot of icons passing, including Mike Sharp earlier today.
Sharper, and then like 2 hours later, Glenn Frey, the Eagles. That came out of, I don't say it came out of nowhere. I heard he was sick.
Right.
67, he had issues with arthritis and colitis and a bunch of other itises. He had pneumonia, 67. Apparently they were set to go in for to get the Kennedy Center honors. So it's a bummer, and I'm very fortunate. I got to see them this past July. Last summer at the Hartford Civic Center, so the XL Center, whatever you call it. So I was, that kind of punched me in the stomach, too. As much as Canada's greatest athlete, the great Iron Mike Sharp, passed away. He was 64. Apparently he was sick, too.
Yes.
So,
yeah,
it'll bummer.
On too. Yeah, rough. We're, definitely a rough few weeks here in the world of sports and entertainment.
Precisely.
So another podcast coming this week, I just want to mention, because we won't be on again, before it drops, and it'll be a while before we talk. So I want to mention a new Rank and File, Jordan Duncan's List podcast. If you haven't heard that before, basically he brings in a couple guests and they build top 10 lists on different categories and then do it. So if you like lists, it's a real fun listen. He's done, favorite current wrestlers. He's done greatest Christmas characters, Christmas movie characters he did last month in December. That was a fun episode. And then this month, myself and Todd Weber were on with him, and we did top Royal Rumble performances, or top Rumble match performances, or at least our favorite Royal Rumble match performances. So that should drop this week in time for the Rumble this weekend, so be sure to check that out. It's a lot of fun, and we had a good time talking about it.
Excellent. Looking forward to that. Yes.
Yep. All right. Why don't we get back at it?
Yes. Let's go back to Oak City.
And we actually go backstage where Eric Bischoff confronts John Cena and says he can't wait for him to lose the title. And Cena's taping himself up and get ready for the match. And he puts a piece of tape over Bischoff's mouth and walks out. So Bischoff has really gone full. We'll talk more about this later, but full, like they're just full hard on Vince Austin at this point with Bischoff, the angry boss, doesn't want Cena as his champ, and Cena, you know, being positioned as the man of the fans. So. Interesting turn that's taken, but we'll talk more about that in a little bit.
Yes. Next up, our second title match of the evening, JR, the Red Belts, otherwise known as the World Tag Team Championship on the line. Your champions, as mentioned, the Matt Rotella specials of Hurricane and Rosie, but taking on a new tag team on the block that has kind of gotten over them on Raw. Who are they?
Hang on. Yeah, you could have vamped a second for me. Jeez, let me hang out there coughing in silence.
I didn't even hear you say hang on.
Okay.
I didn't even hear you.
William Miller began his career in the Missouri area, where he also trained under the legendary Harley Race, using the name Trevor Rhodes. In 2000, he changed his name to Stand Up and teamed the Bowed Up, spending time at ECW, Ohio Valley, and TNA. Of course, not the dupes, as some idiots may lead you to believe. After splitting from Bo,
I was about to say something too.
After splitting from Bo while at OVW, he began teaming with Lance Cade, and eventually, I can't believe we're still talking about the fucking dupes all this time.
Fucking dupes.
After splitting from Bo Dupe while in the Dupe Boys in OVW, he began teaming with Lance Cade and eventually signed a developmental deal in June 05. By July, he inked a 3-year deal with WWE, and Vignettes began airing, pimping the impending Dupe debut of Cade and Murdoch, which was portrayed by Miller. He was given the name Trevor Murdoch due to his resemblance to Dick Murdoch. Cade was to portray a smooth-talking cowboy, while Murdoch portrayed the role of an angry southern redneck. Cade had been off TV since July 04, rehabbing a knee injury and updating his persona. They made their way to the ring on 9-5, defeating Hurricane and Rosie in a non-title match. I don't want to...
Trevor Dupe. Lance Dupe.
Them damn dupes. And I remember Dr. G actually thought for a long time that he was Murdoch's son. I remember breaking the news to him. He was like shocked that it wasn't really his son, because they did look alike.
They did look a lot alike. I remember that too. I was thinking about that today too when I was watching it. I'm like, wait, are they? I hadn't remembered looking, and then I realized, yeah, no, it wasn't. But
what did you think of bringing Cade back? Hey, and what did you think of this gimmick?
Oh, it was awesome. Needed a good. I'm always a mark for old school Southern heel tag teams. Like a Arn and Tully kind of thing. You know, it was
like Buckhouse Buck.
Yeah. Yes. Something from the Stud Stable, you know.
Right.
Yeah,
that's a roughhouse, southern asshole tag team.
Yeah.
But I like Kane as like the smooth talker. I think that was cool there. He's always like trying to schmooze everyone, and Murdoch's just the guy, you know, hawking loogies in the back.
Yeah. But yeah, I enjoyed him. It was a good team.
Yeah, they had good chemistry too. So this would actually be Rosie's final pay-per-view appearance. On 10-10, Hurricane was assaulted by Kurt Angle all over the arena and in the ring. After Angle left, Rosie came out to console Hurricane, but Hurricane shoved him away, took his mask off, and left. On 11-7, the newly rechristened
Gregory Dupes.
re-edged Gregory Helms defeated Rosie. That would also be Rosie's final appearance.
Did you just say re-edged?
Well, yeah, re-Christianed or re-edged.
Re-Christianed or re-edged?
He would reunite with Jamal in a winning effort at a house show in January and would float around until his release in March. He wrestled in the Indies before returning for the Hall of Fame ceremony for WrestleMania 23 to induct the Wild Samoans, who made a brief return to WWE in August, wrestled a couple dark matches, and continues to wrestle in the Indies. Final record, 3-6. And, of course, he had debuted as part of 3-Minute Warning back in the day. So... Yep. Yes, unique look and style for Kane and Murdoch. Hurricane and Rosie have had a very bland reign, all on TV, no pay-per-view matches, placeholder champs. I mean, the gimmick's fun, but just one of the most forgettable tag title reigns of all time, maybe.
Yeah, and it's funny because it seemed like they had such a crazy pop when they won that multi-tag thing. What was that, Backlash?
Yeah.
And they got such a huge pop when they won, and then they just kind of coasted through the summer. It fizzled out fairly quickly.
I mean, I guess in their defense... Raw hasn't had a pay-per-view where they could really fit because Vengeance was so loaded and they didn't have room for a shit rain from them or a shit match from them. And then SummerSlam, forget it. So,
yeah.
I mean, I know that speaks just as much to them, but, Trevor Murdoch, great old school look, Helms ducks and dodges and frustrates Cade, both tag out, and I lost my spot. Rosie rattles Trevor Murdoch with a headbutt. Murdoch rolls outside and puts some moves on Lillian until Hurricane makes a save, which backfires as Murdoch DDTs him off the apron to the floor in a nice spot. I like that a lot.
Yeah, I do too.
Rosie has to go it alone. Hurricane's out on the floor. Kane and Murdoch keep double-teaming Rosie, using the distraction of the ref to batter Rosie on the floor, using the apron in the post. Hurricane gets taken away by officials as Rosie keeps taking a beating. The crowd is just completely flattened out again. Helms fights away and stumbles back to the ring, tags himself in. Levy's one-arm attack, but Kane and Murdoch hit the high and low for the win. It was a fun squash. Kane and Murdoch dominated. I think they put over the new champ strong, which is smart, decimated them. The crowd was completely disengaged, but I think this is absolutely the way to go. There was some fear, maybe, that when Hurricane came back, that's kind of a spot where the faces end up winning, but I'm glad they didn't, and I'm glad they had it this be a squash, because Hurricane and Rosie are going nowhere, especially with Rosie pretty much being done. So if you're going to switch the titles and build up this new heel team, you may as well just make them look as nasty and hard-hitting as possible, and they did that here.
I love this team. Love this team. They have this old-school NWA, you know, 80s kind of nasty team, almost like Murdoch. And I mean, not to, you know, just not to say that because of Trevor, but they kind of had that Murdoch, Adrian Adonis kind of thing. And they were awesome. And Caden... Rosie and Hurricane were cooked. I mean, there's no doubt about it. This was very much needed. We had been saying pretty much all year that the tag divisions in both shows were pretty shitty. So I think they needed a pretty fresh tag team, and this is a perfect team, perfect good old school heel tag team to go in. And Murdoch was funny when he was in Lillian's face. Give me a kiss, girl. Come on, girl. Give me a kiss. This was really funny. I enjoyed it a lot. And, you know, Cade's kind of the polished technician, you know, good looking guy, good physique and everything. And Murdoch's kind of like a, you know, lump of nothing, but boy, could he fight. Perfect interaction of guys. And, you know, they took care of business. And I liked the whole, it was fine. You kind of protected Hurricane and Rosie a bit, that, you know, Hurricane was half out of it and he tried to get back in the match kind of thing. It was easy. You know, it's a usable, you know, a crutch for babyface losses. So that's fine.
Right. Kane Murdoch. And they took him out with a wicked shot, too. I mean, that was no no joke. They really snapped him off with that DDT on the floor. That was a nice bump.
Yeah, they dumped him pretty good. And he was out of it pretty much the rest of the match. So there you go. Kane Murdoch, your new World Tag Team Champions. And very excited. Nice to have a good old school. They kind of have that Brainbusters feel a little bit. Not the show, but Arn and Tully. Pretty awesome. I believe we go back to the limo, correct?
I don't know if we're back there yet. No, we're not.
No? Okay. Next, one of our co-main events, and a big moment for a young guy, because whenever you get in the ring with this guy on a pay-per-view, it means you are getting a huge opportunity. And after you give this fun fact, I want to talk about this for a minute before we get to the match itself. But go ahead. How do we get here?
All right. We got here on the A22 Raw. Shawn Michaels came out, but the Hogan match, a feud in the past, hit his biting comebacks and looked to reestablish himself as a face. It's like, comes out, shits all over Hogan, and then flips a switch, and he's just a goody-goody again. Chris Masters aided that quest when he started to the ring and asked Shawn when he's going to step aside and pass the torch to younger stars. Shawn warned him to step off, but Masters continued until Michaels attacked him and knocked him to the floor. A week later, Michaels teamed with Ric Flair, but Masters and Carlito defeated them when Flair passed out in the Master Lock. A 9-5, Masters challenged Michaels to break the Master Lock. Michaels held on and almost broke the hold with a low blow. Excuse me. Masters shook that off and spiked Michaels to the mat and then blasted him with a chair, busting him open. Masters hoisted him back up and hooked the Master Lock on again to end the show. Masters got the last laugh on 9-12, hooking Michaels in the Master Lock again after a match of Flair. And like I mentioned before, Scott, this was like really big slot and really hyped for them. Showed the promo package earlier. They mentioned it a couple times. It closed out that Raw. So, you know, really using Michaels to put Masters in a big spot. So, too bad. Do you want to talk about your point before we get to the...
Yeah, I mean, it, like I said, it was funny that... it was pretty funny that that Shawn came in, pretty much said, yeah, I was, you know, that last night sucked, and he's a douche, and fuck him, and okay, here's me again, yay! It was like, really, it was so strange, you know? and every right to. I mean, I don't believe Shawn Michaels a liar. This isn't 1998, Shawn. So he pretty much said, "Yeah, I was promised, you know, something down the line," and oh, brother, and then you move on. So that didn't faze me. So I enjoyed that he just kind of flipped the switch, and now it's back to all right, whatever. I'm out of this now. Let's move on back to the Shawn I was before. pretty weird, but. For Shawn, I mean, Shawn, in a creative sense, at this stage of his career, can much do anything, and it always looks good.
Oh, so, yeah, and I think this is a good spot for him. I mean, it was sad because everyone was so into, you know, everyone was so into the heel stuff with Hogan that it felt a little, you know, it felt like a big step down. But I was encouraged because instead of making it feel like a step back for Michaels, they did a hell of a job making it feel like Masters was coming up a level. Like, Michaels is coming off this big main event run. He's not being defazed. This is almost like a double main event in many ways. That's how this was sold. Yeah. So I thought it was good. I thought they used Michaels in a good way.
Yep.
I thought they really made Masters look like a legit threat here. I liked it. So, you know, big slot for him. But and the Master Lock still hasn't been broken. And, of course, Michaels promises to end the streak and use Sweet Chin Music to thwart the Master Lock. Masters still has that great look and a real fun meathead gimmick that's really developed. And I like the pairing with him and Carlito, kind of the Pinky and the Brain thing they got going on. Carlito's like the little evil mastermind, and Masters is just the big dummy that does all the beating.
Yes.
Masters attacks and and hooks the lock.
That's great.
He attacks and actually hooks the Master Lock before the bell while Michaels disrobes. And I love that great aggressive start from him. Michaels comes back with chops and a knee lift and sends Masters to the floor. Michaels dives to the floor and brings the attack out there. Tries to use a chair, but the ref yanks it away, and Masters kicks his way back in and then runs Michaels hard into the post. Smart match by Masters so far. They put that over on commentary as well. He keeps pounding the back, clubs him with forearms and strikes. And we get a nice series of backbreakers by Masters, and it gets some buzz in the crowd as well. Masters fends off a comeback. It hooks the torture rack in. Great visual there in spot two. Crowd rallies Michaels. He wriggles free. Masters goes to the Master Lock, but Michaels ties up the ref, and Mules kicks it to break it up. Michaels hits a flying forearm and makes his usual comeback. Masters dodges Sweet Chin Music and grabs the Master Lock again, and that was a great twist, and the crowd got super into it at that point. Michaels battles hard, kicking off the ropes, but can't break it, and then finally just jumps over the ropes to force the break. Michaels hung on a little too long, I thought, but not as bad as we saw at the ankle lock in the past, and the hold wasn't broken, which is good. It stays protected. Michaels hits a desperation Sweet Chin Music for the win and the big pop. And while I get you can't have Michaels probably lose again after losing a SummerSlam, this felt like a big chance to make Masters a made man if Michaels just passed out in the Master Lock. I really felt that they could have pulled the trigger here. The match was really great, and it was well worked, and the crowd was super into it. Masters worked a smart match. He busted his ass. They put it over, and he hung and he hung and he hung. And the master lock could have been really built up, and masters could have been built up. And it would have been a shrewd move, because if you look at the future landscape for, like, John Cena, mm-hmm. they could have really used a guy like Masters to be a legit threat. If all of a sudden this guy made Michaels pass out in a master lock, and then you build him up for a pay-per-view shot against Cena, like, that'd be pretty good.
Right.
You know? I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you think they should have? Well, what did you think of the match? Were you surprised by it? Because it caught me off guard completely. But I really liked it a lot. And do you think it was time maybe to just take a shot and give Masters the win? And just one little caveat, too. I thought they could have, like, given Michaels an injury heading in. Like, maybe, you know, Masters had hit him in the head, so that helps him pass out, if they wanted to add a little bit to protect Sean. But I don't know. I thought this was a spot where Sean could have taken a loss.
The match was really, really good. And the reason is because it's almost similar. And Sean, I think this is kind of like a template for a lot of Sean's matches in the last year or so, and heading into the future. This feud and this match was similar, I would say, to his match with Kurt at Vengeance. Before people will think I'm comparing Kurt to Masters, I'm not. What I'm saying is, that match, Sean realized, wow, this guy's got an incredible submission move, the ankle lock. I've got to find a way to not get caught in it. Similar thing here. I need to find a way to not get caught in this full Nelson. What do I do? You know, it was a similar match in that aspect. The difference here is obviously Sean's dealing with a guy who's obviously not Kurt Angle. So in this instance, Sean had to kind of help him out a little bit, but Masters really put over his power stuff, mm-hmm. really did a nice job.
Well, I like the way he really punished the back, like, to set up the hold.
Yeah.
Like, that was real smart. Like,
he knew what to do.
Match, yeah.
Yeah, he knew what to do. He laid it out well. I'm sure, you know, him and Sean talked it over, you know, in the back, and Sean kind of helped him. Look, do this. I guarantee you it'll work. And it did. I mean, Masters meant to soften up the traps and get ready to just, you know, hook Sean in it, and Sean needed to find a way to not get caught in it, similar to not getting caught in the ankle lock with Kurt at Vengeance. Not necessarily Mania, more Vengeance, because at Mania, you know, Sean didn't know more as much about Kurt as he would a few months later. But the premise is the same here, is that Sean was trying to avoid getting hooked in the full Nelson, the master lock. But Sean took a pretty good beating, and the last few minutes were really hot, and the crowd had a buzz.
Mm-hmm.
There was a buzz. Like, I would say, JR, honestly, like, the last 50 minutes of this pay-per-view, there was a buzz. Like, the crowd
show,
was
really,
crowd was feeling it, you know?
Outside of the Curran White and the tag title match, the crowd was really into the show, almost the whole way through.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this match in particular, they definitely really got into it, and... you know, I think Masters look good anyway, even in the loss, but this to me was one where the win would have went so much to him and the hold if Michaels passes out the hold.
Yeah, and I'll say that yes, I think you could have had Masters just have Sean just pass out, even if you had to bust him open, the usual Sean bleeding 50 buckets thing. You could do that.
And my thought is maybe they didn't because of how the main event was going to end. And that maybe they wanted this to kind of be the feel good for the crowd, you know?
True. And it doesn't really hurt. It doesn't hurt. The one thing at this is a good point. I just thought of this a second ago that you talked about feel good moment. The one thing you can say about the super kick, about Sweet Chin Music, is that because it comes literally out of nowhere. It's not like a setup move like a stunner or a pedigree or, you know, the tombstone, something like that, where you've got to be half out of it and beaten down before the move can be applied. But for the super kick, for Sweet Chin Music, you could be on top of the world. You could be kicking the shit out of somebody, and all of a sudden, Sean will just go bang, and 3 seconds later, you lose. And that's not a bad thing.
No, and he didn't look bad at all.
Right.
So this didn't hurt Masters at all, and it helped him, but it could have really helped him. And
right.
It could have really made his hold like a killer hold. And it didn't hurt the hold because he didn't break it, but it didn't super help it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And at a time where they kind of needed some more heels, especially with a guy like Cena who, you know, was not getting the best receptions already at this point? Instead of putting him with, you know, beloved guys, put him with a pure heel like Masters. That'll help get him over. And they kind of do, but I don't know.
I'm fine either way. I think it was meant to kind of give the fans a feel good because the main event does kind of inch locky, and we'll get to that in a second. You could have very easily had Sean pass out with, you know, his usual blood buckets and everything, and could have had some kind of rematch at Taboo Tuesday, and I think you'd have been perfectly fine. So I agree with you. There was no need for Sean to win, but you could have flipped a coin, and either way, it would have been a win-win for the match. I say that. So Shawn Michaels wins. Good match. Just a little under 17 minutes, and really no dead spots. And just as much Sean, because Sean, let's give a thumbs up to Chris Masters. We make fun of the guy. He's a big, you know, jacked up meathead, and he was definitely, I mean, another guy that probably should not be taking wellness policy tests.
No.
But
it was, but for him, it worked because he's got, you know, he's got the frame, he's got the build, he's got the size, he's got the, that's the gimmick. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I don't need to see my cruiser guys that are not meant to carry that weight. And
right.
I'm not saying he should be juicing. But guys like that can carry the weight. It's not healthy on Rey Mysterio or Chavo Guerrero or Dynamite Kid or Chris Benoit or Eddie Guerrero. You know, those guys aren't made to carry all that muscle mass. It's just it's not good for them.
Right. But Masters, still, I mean, you shouldn't be taking that stuff anyway, but at least it kind of fit the gimmick. But either way, to wrap it up, I think Sean winning is not the worst thing in the world for Masters. He put on a wonderful performance. But if you wanted to flip the switch and have Masters win, you could very well do that and get the same effect. So it's fine. But Shawn Michaels gets the win, rebounds from the loss that he had to eat at SummerSlam, and is fine. But great performance by Chris Masters. I don't think anybody else on the ref. If anybody needed that kind of performance to kind of boost him from being just a one move meathead, this was it.
Right.
So worked out good. Now I think we finally get to the limo, and this is such an utter mess. And the women leave dressed, and he's like half out of it. He comes out all sweaty and gross, still holding the belt.
I like when they all just unload, and then of course we get the shot of Flair's bare ass.
Yeah, we need the fucking plumber's crack sticking out. Yeah, that we really need that.
Crack, was that? It was like almost his whole ass, I think.
It was pretty much half. Yeah, it was like half his ass, pretty much. Yeah.
So he stumbles out, he does a Flair flop to the ground.
Yeah.
And I like how his music was playing every time too.
Yes. Randomly in the garage.
Yes. It was so good. Weird. I liked these bits. They were funny. They were hokey, but they were funny.
Yeah. So, all right. Time now for our main event. The WWE Championship is up for grabs.
Someday, when I'm awfully low, when the world is cold, I will feel a glow just thinking of you and the way you look tonight.
I'll tell you, that Jim Johnson is a mean Sinatra.
I thought you were going to say John Legend or something. figured it fit, since we were talking about Kerwin White earlier. Yeah. Figured we'd play a cut that somebody we actually know from him. All right. John Cena coming off. He defeated Chris Jericho at SummerSlam, but that feud did not end. It did on the next night, and then something else happened. Get us here, JR.
On 8/22, Cena defeated Chris Jericho in the SummerSlam rematch. As a result, Jericho was fired from Raw. And after that bout ended, Kurt Angle jumped Cena and decimated him as Eric Bischoff, who's obsessed with getting the belt off Cena, announced that Angle was the new top title contender. The two would have a good verbal duel the next week, with Angle calling Cena a thug and intimated he wasn't worthy of being champion. On 9/5, Angle quickly defeated Eugene but kept assaulting him. That draw Cena out. Cena would knock Angle to the floor, but when he turned around, Tyson Tomko would enter the ring and kick Cena's head off. Cena would defeat Tomko later in the night, but Angle would again jump Cena and leave him laid out. The next week, Cena defeated Angle and Tomko in a handicap match, but Cena was again left looking at the lights. This time, however, Bischoff yelled at him while Angle had him pinned down. Bischoff vowed that Cena would not win while he was GM, and he would lose his title soon enough. So like I said, full on, you know, obsessive McMahon Austin. Did you buy it at all, or was it just like, did it feel like they were forcing it too much?
I think they were definitely forcing it. Yeah, they were definitely forcing it. They were definitely trying to reestablish Bischoff, because pretty much after, I would say, the last time he really inflicted his will as GM in a main event sense was probably the tail end of 03 with the whole Shawn Triple H title match in San Antonio thing. Because most of 04, he's bullied around by Evolution, and you don't really see him much. Maybe in the Eugene stuff, but for the most part, he's pretty much doing nothing in 2004. So I think, you know, just to kind of utilize Bischoff's usefulness as heel GM, he kind of had to go full-blown 98 Vince here. And it definitely was not working. It didn't work. I mean, it was pretty much Vince and Steve, but with...
Well, I thought Bischoff worked in the role. Like, I thought he was really good at it. The problem is, we've seen it, and Cena's not Austin, because it doesn't happen naturally. Like, the crowd likes Cena, but I don't know. Like, why would Bischoff not want him to be champion? We don't really have a reason. He doesn't swear and cuss, really.
Right.
He's not, like, foul-mouthed, and he's not drinking beer. He's not a bad... I mean, he raps, but he had a successful album. I don't know. We don't really have a reasoning behind Bischoff hating him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, because he won't play ball. I mean, whatever. That's just, I don't know. Seems to not be enough to hate your champion. Right. You know? Weird.
So, Cena's already run Jericho off, and Bischoff continues to become obsessive. Angle attacks Cena brutally after the match. Angle is a full Bischoff guy in this quest. Angle in his full wrestling machine mode as well. Split crowd for Cena during the entrance. Angle super confident in his skills, very dismissive of Cena. Angle tries to grind. Actually, I want to pause there for a sec already. What did you think of Angle being so dismissive of Cena's wrestling ability? Because it happens again in another feud. And do you think that shit hurt his credibility? Because Angle's a guy you believe. And, you know, it's like, I know he's a heel, but he's kind of acting like a face in many ways, but not, I don't know. It's just, it feels like he's discrediting Cena at a time where Cena needs all the credibility he can have.
Well, I mean, I believe as we figure out down the line backstage, Kurt was not the biggest Cena fan to begin with. So I think Kurt kind of took the low road as a veteran and, pretty much, shit on him, and I might've ruined him a little bit. I think Kurt kind of didn't. He needed to do better as a company man and help put this kid over as a future, you know, face of the company. And instead, he kind of trashed on him. And I know it happens again in the following year, but I think it was probably not the best thing to do. It's probably not the best thing to do. Cena needed a boost, because SmackDown was one thing, and he put the fact he was a stud was fine.
Well, I don't know if he even needed a boost.
Beating JBL.
I don't think he needed a boost as much as he didn't need to be torn down. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm not saying Angle had to go out there and say, you know, Kurt Angle, you know, John Cena, you're the greatest wrestler I've ever seen. You should have been, you know, in the Olympics too. I don't know. Like, I'm just saying he shouldn't have been saying you can't wrestle, you suck, you're not worthy. You know, like that kind of stuff. Just, you know, people are going to agree because he's so good. I don't know. Angle's so good and believable, and he's a legit voice of a pure wrestler that you're going to probably take it. Yeah, you know what? Cena can't wrestle. He's only got five moves. Like, why do we want to hear it, you know?
Right. And you know that, I know we saw a little of it in the Jericho feud, but this is definitely the first feud where we begin to see the demographic split. And the guys in the crowd are like, you know, this guy does kind of suck. He's wearing jorts and stupid sneakers. I mean,
and
what
Kurt
is he doing?
Angle can wrestle, and we love him. He's been around 6 years. This is just a good feud because it's going to give us pretty good matches, and it helps Cena grow. But it's not really a good feud for Cena as a like character and as a champion, because everyone loves Kurt Angle, and it's hard to really hate him. And he just had awesome matches with Shawn Michaels that we all loved. And, yeah, he's a great, you know, angry machine, but... You know, Angle would have been better in a feud with Batista, because Batista can kind of absorb the blow. He's really over, and he needed to be walked through more than Cena. I know Cena, to me, felt like a guy that needed more of the Batista route. Maybe they should have left him alone. Like, Cena feuding with JBL and then Chris Masters and, like, the more stiff kind of guys. You know what I mean? And
right.
Batista, to me, needed more of the workers. And they kind of flip it a bit with Batista's next feud. But to me, he could absorb those kind of feuds better than Cena could without getting the
boot. Yeah, because, I mean, Batista's a little more established.
But he's not supposed to be a good wrestler. You know what I mean?
He's a power guy.
Hooked? Batista's a big juiced power guy. What's Cena's hook? If he's your champion, he's not as big as Batista. He's not as big as other guys. You know, Triple H, we never hear he's a bad wrestler, right? I mean, I would probably put them on par as far as, like, scientific stuff goes. I mean, and you never hear that about him or even Rock. You know, Rock, pretty shitty in ring wrestler in many ways, you know? Hulk Hogan. I mean, did, you know, King Kong Bundy ever stand there and say Hulk Hogan, you're a shitty wrestler? No, he was the greatest athlete in the world today, they always call him. And he clearly wasn't. But, like, that's what I didn't like about this stuff early on, was they buried Cena's ability as a, you know, as an athlete and a wrestler. And they didn't really hide from it on the commentary. Like, they didn't back it up and say, no, that's all lies. You know, they kind of, he's learning, you know. It did him no favors at all, this kind of stuff. And
that's where it begins.
You know,
and it never changed.
So
anyway, you were in the middle of your go ahead.
Yeah, so Angle tries to grind him. Hip tosses Angle. Cena hip tosses him to the floor. Angle targets the arm, but Cena grabs a headlock. The crowd swinging behind Angle now. JR references Cena's debut against Angle back in the day. Angle bails to the floor to regroup again. The crowd's really raucous here. They keep flipping their support back and forth. Angle gets a German to finally take control. Then he starts pumping uppercuts and kicks. Angle grinds into a chin lock and a crossface, wrenching Cena, whipping him all over the place with a belly-to-belly. Angle locks in a body scissors, but Cena battles up and hits a DDT, leads to a big slugfest. Cena hits a spinning slam for a near fall. Angle reverses the FU into an ankle lock, but Cena kicks out. That was a nice series there. I like that a lot. Cena gets a two off a spine buster. The crowd's going wild now. Angle blocks the FU and hits an angle slam for a close near fall. Cena comes back and sells the ankle nicely through the five-knuckle shuffle. Ref gets a bump, gets bumped, but can't count the FU as a result. Kurt Angle hits a stiff low blow, gets a kick, and then uses the brass knuckles before hooking on the ankle lock. Bischoff comes out, brings the belt in, and then jams it in Cena's face to taunt him. Cena gets the ropes. Bischoff kicks his arm away, and this calls for the bell. Cena twists out and kicks Angle into Bischoff. Cena bashes Angle with the belt, but the referee sees it and calls for the DQ. And the crowd didn't like that at all, but the finish I thought made sense because you can't really have either guy lose yet. Cena hits the FU on Bischoff to close out and get some heat, and then Angle wrecks Cena. Afterwards, Cena turns it around and gets an FU through the table. And I like this match a lot. I thought it was really good. I thought it was really fun. Well worked. They hit the shit out of each other. It felt fresh on the top of the card. It was a good close to an underrated show. So a lot of that goes against what I just talked about. But like I said, from an aesthetic standpoint, it was fine. But from what they're trying to do to establish Cena, I think it hurt. What did you think of the match itself?
The match was very good. And again, the crowd really was into it. There was a buzz the whole match. It felt like a big main event. I feel like the crowd wanted to get behind Cena, obviously. They wanted to, you know, they wanted Angle to lose. But it got stuck in their heads that, you know, it wasn't as much with Jericho, because Jericho's character was fitting with Bischoff, you know, going into SummerSlam and that kind of thing. So the fans weren't as engaged, and the rumors were out there that Jericho was leaving, so they weren't going to get too invested. But here, you know, the guys think that, you know, Kurt's a son of a bitch. You know, he's a badass, and he's coming off an epic feud that the diehard work rate junkies loved. You know, regardless of who won the matches. You know, Kurt won one, Sean won the other, but it didn't matter. The two matches were rocked all kinds of ass. So that didn't help Cena, because it felt like for Kurt it was a downgrade.
Right.
Now, should Kurt have come out here and just took the title from him? Of course not. Boy, that really would have, you never would have seen Cena again. It was a really good match. I thought it told a great story. I thought we had a little too much Bischoff at the end. I didn't like the whole... Remember how you used to bitch about the Rock Austin match at 17, where Vince is like standing there? I felt the same way with Bischoff. Nah, the whole, I mean, to
a
certain extent,
situation.
It is. But at the same time, he kind of ruined the end for me.
Yeah, but he was meant to ruin the end. WrestleMania 17, you don't want a ruined ending. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, no, I know.
Given, I mean, it's fine, and it's not the end of the feud. That was supposed to be the end of the feud, but I liked the decision here because obviously a feud needs to keep going, and I didn't mind that because I liked Bischoff shoving the belt in his face, but it kind of makes him look dumb because he ends up, when he like rings the bell, Angle breaks the hole. Then, you know, it's not officially over, so why would you do that? Why wouldn't you want, you'd want him to hold the hold on until the ref gets up? It's, why didn't he have another ref come out and count? You know what I mean? There's just, that part made Bischoff kind of look dumb.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, the big spot at the end, and Cena FUs him onto the table, and he gets a little juice back. He's a little saved here.
Yeah, well, they have to do that. I mean, that's a standard.
Yeah, I think he save-faced a little at the end. So I think Cena's okay for now, but for the first time, because his pop was pretty hot overall when the match started. But at the end, you could see it. You could hear little smatterings, not boos. Nobody was openly booing him yet.
No, they just weren't cheering him.
But they weren't. It was not nearly as hot as a guy who's leading the number one show in the company should have.
No, it was.
He's not getting Sean pops.
Right.
He's not getting, you know, Batista. He's certainly not getting Batista pops, which he should be. Both two guys pretty much started at the same time. Batista has. I think, you know what it is, JR? I think, and this is not a knock on Cena, and I'm not saying he is, but the problem is between, and I'm using Batista as the other example because he's the other champion. Batista's charisma seems organic, and Cena's charisma seems forced. Even though I know it's not, and I know Cena's working his butt off, but at this point, and Cena would easily get better as time progressed, obviously. But at this moment, Batista just seems like a natural, charismatic, you know, smooth-talking champion, and seen as this, like, upstart who won in an upset. That's what's weird. Batista took on the automatic guy at WrestleMania, the guy that no one should ever beat, and he did. Cena beat the guy that nobody really cared about anymore, yet Cena's the one that comes off as the guy trying too hard, and Batista's coming off as the smooth, suave, you know, charismatic world champion that we all knew he can be.
Yeah, the switch, I think they should have held off a little bit longer. I really do on the switch. I think they should have kept Batista on Raw a little bit longer. He fit well. Right. He was doing well. Triple H was leaving anyway. And Cena was fitting well on SmackDown. Like, he was
really
good
was.
There. He didn't feel, you know, pushed too hard. But I also think, again, things could have went differently on Raw if they just went a little bit different than Jericho Angle back-to-back. I mean, even if you wanted to do Jericho, it made sense because he's leaving. Fine,
right.
But to then, you know, follow it up with Angle felt a little much. Like, I feel like they could have given him someone else here, and then, you know, whatever, set him up for Angle at Survivor Series. It is back to back. It felt like a lot. Like, and even Christian was in there too. It's like you have these three guys that the fans love, even though they're heels. And then, you know, those are your first three challengers on your first tilt on Raw. Or guys that the crowd wants to like. So it was just, I don't know. It was just a weird.
Yeah, it was.
I'm surprised they didn't like set him up with Shawn Michaels too, you know. But the problem is, like, what other, I guess I'm trying to think, what other hated heels do they have with Triple H gone? You know, Orton's on SmackDown. Masters wasn't really ready yet. I mean, Snitsky, forget it.
If you want to ditch the Kerwin White nonsense,
no.
the one thing I would do
is. You can't feud with Chavo.
No. I would have had Shelton battle Carlito and maybe have Flair fight Cena.
Yeah, you could have done that.
That would have been a fun little one match gimmick thing.
Yeah, you could have done that too. That could have worked. I was going to say turn Shelton. That could have worked too, maybe.
Oh, that would have been fantastic.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they had to go with Angle. I still think maybe Angle could have stayed on SmackDown and even feud with Batista. I don't know. Maybe there's no answer. Maybe they did what they could and that was all they had, but it certainly feels like they did John Cena no favors here in these early months, and it's something they still, you know, deal with today, some of the remnants of it, the way he was handled in those early days. But I don't know. Maybe it's just Cena's personality. I don't know. I don't know what it is.
Mm. But anyway, my point is, I think what the problem is that it does seem like Cena shocked the world by beating JBL. And
you
even
think
though
so?
The only reason it seemed like that was because Cena was booked as such on SmackDown at that time. Whereas Batista, because he's just that good at it, was Triple H's equal, it seemed like, going into WrestleMania.
Hmm.
And from that point forward, Batista was just the suave. He just knows his shit, man. He's good. regardless of the fact he's a power guy that has like 11 moves. But that's fine, because a lot of those fans don't fucking care how many moves you have, as long as you're entertaining them. Cena, on the other hand, still seems like he's trying to find his place in the world. And the problem is you're having him face guys as heel as they are. He's a heel, and you're Kurt's guy. You don't care. You know what I mean? You love Kurt.
Right.
There's a lot of guys that love Kurt. And
he's super credible. And when you have him going out there and saying, you suck, you're not on my league, you can't wrestle, you're a shit wrestler. Like, why not just come out and say, you know, Cena, you're a good wrestler, man, but you're not on my level yet. And someday you may be. But instead, you're like, you don't deserve the belt. You didn't earn it. And, yeah, he kind of hasn't. You know? He kind of hasn't. Just imagine, you know, whatever. Iron Sheik was a pretty credible wrestler in 1983. Imagine him saying, you know, I was in the Olympics. Fuck you, Hulk Hogan. You're trash. You know, you're doing fake wrestling. It's like, you know, they didn't do that, right? They put over Hogan as a star.
Yep. Very different, because they all knew that if he stayed a star, they were all going to make money.
Right.
So, you know, they weren't stupid. You know,
and,
but
I mean,
maybe
you know,
that's
what happened. And there's been rumors at the time, too, that Angle didn't like Cena and sabotaged him a bit. I don't know if it's true or not.
I don't know if it is either. But those rumors do get strong as this feud progresses, and we'll talk more, you know, we'll document that over the next few vaults. But it did seem like a strong rumor. So yeah, there was a lot of issues about that. There was a lot of issues about that. But I think my theory holds a little water. I'm curious what some of our Place B Nation listeners think. I think Cena really still seemed like the plucky underdog champion, even though he was the face of Raw, but still needed some credibility, which is why he was facing the more credible challengers. I mean, think about the guys that Batista has faced. You know, I mean, he only faced one, and obviously our next vault we'll talk about his next opponent. But Batista was facing guys that maybe not many people. You definitely needed a flip-flop. I don't think there's any doubt about it. Cena needed to stay on SmackDown and face different challengers, while Batista needed to stay established on Raw and face guys that are already established. And as you could say, he can take the, yeah, I know, I only have five or six moves, but I'll still beat you. Cena didn't have that credibility to be able to say that to Kurt Angle. But Batista did. That's what it is. Cena didn't have the moxie to say, you know, I don't quit. I don't care whether you quit or not. You're a shitty wrestler. Whereas Batista could say to him, I know I'm not a better wrestler than you. I'll still kick your ass and take your title. Or keep my title. You know, he just would deliver it better in a more positive, more confident nature than Cena can. And obviously that'll change as we progress, particularly as we get into 2006. I think the switch flips. Well, obviously something happens to Batista, but we'll get to that. And Cena does gain his credibility as time moves on, and then I think things get a little unfair. But at the moment, yeah, Cena still needed to have his feet planted, and they weren't yet.
Mm-hmm.
But Batista's were, and the switch of shows was a big mistake.
All right, well, that.
So, but having said that,
yes.
But I mean, hey, you know, it's the main event. But having said that,
it's
this
the
was
main event.
It's the main event. Well, that's in a couple days. The match is very good, though. Let's premise that. For those that haven't watched this pay-per-view, go on the network. It's a good show. This is a good match.
I like.
And Cena does hold his own.
Yeah.
So
I surprised. Yeah, I liked it. It surprised me rewatching it. I did not remember it being this good. The cage match is really damn good. The main event's really fun. Michaels Masters is a little bit of a hidden gem. Edge Hardy is kind of a forgotten gem. The Flair stuff is really fun. Only a couple, you know, Kerwin White was really the only dog. The tag match wasn't great, but it was just a squash. I don't know. Yeah, the show kind of moved. I liked it. The crowd was super hot. You know, even Snitsky's show was fine. So, yeah, I really liked this show a lot. Surprisingly positive on that one. I didn't, you know, I'm curious. 2005 to me so far has been the complete opposite of 2004. And I always thought the years were similar. Like, I always thought 2005 mirrored 2004 with similar, like, just kind of throwaway, forgettable secondary shows. But all these ones in 2005 have been much better than I expected them to be. And now I'm kind of curious to get into 2006, because I always remember that being such a moribund year. So I'm curious if it is.
Yeah. I think every year we walk into, we're going to say, it seems like every year we walk into, it's like, oh man, I remember this year really sucking. And then we're going to watch show by show, and I'm sure we're going to find some stinkers. There's no doubt about it.
I think 2006 definitely has some stinkers. And I'm curious at the end of 2005, too, because I don't remember some of these late 2005 ones very well, but we'll see.
Well, we were at one. Don't forget that.
Right.
Except the weather was about as cold as it is right now.
Right.
No, we'll get to that. So anyway, yeah. check out Unforgiven. It's 05. It is a really good show, and it is a good main event. And I'm looking forward to us discussing Cena Batista as guys on the shows further, because I think it is. I think I'm going to stick by that. I think that was one of the main problems. And honestly, Kurt didn't do him any favors. And I think both our guys will be guilty of this over the next 6 months. But
yeah,
anyway,
worth,
there we go. So sure. Kurt wins by DQ, but John Cena retains the WWE Championship.
All right. So why don't we go ahead and wrap things up? We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. We'll be back with No Mercy. And that one will actually be later in the week. We have to switch things up a bit. So Wednesday night. That week, in 2 weeks' time, will be No Mercy. Yep. So between now and then, check out all our other shows. We get a new main event this week.
Yes.
You have your guests lined up?
I do. We have, we'll be doing our Royal Rumble preview. It'll be Jordan Duncan, Aaron George, and the Godfather, Virgil Milton.
Nice.
Will be joining us. Yes. And we'll be previewing the Rumble and talking about maybe surprise entrance and things like that. So check it out. It'll be up Thursday morning. So.
Yep. So we'll be looking forward to that. We have as of now, planning on having a new Dangerous Alliance wrestling podcast this week as
Excellent.
Well.
Excellent.
So Will and I will be back. New Kevin Kelly Show returns, episode 50 next week. So Kevin back from Japan. Everything in the books heading into 2016. So we'll talk about that as well. So lots going on here in the world of PlaceToBeNation.com. And again, check out that rank and file as well this week. So everyone enjoy the Rumble. Enjoy the Rumble preview on main event. We'll recap it over the next couple weeks, and we'll cover everything from there. So everyone, take care. We'll be back in a couple weeks' time.
When I'm awfully Kerwin, where's my khaki shorts?
I kind of picture Kerwin White hanging with the mob now in the garage.
Yes. Kerwin sucks. Kerwin sucks. Kerwin sucks.
Hey, where's Kerwin?
Hey, it's Kerwin.
Cheeks so soft.
Kerwin.
There is nothing for me but to love you and the way you tonight. With each word, your tenderness grows, tearing my fear apart, and that laugh wrinkles your nose. Touches my foolish heart. Lovely, never, never change. Keep that breathless charm. Won't you please arrange it? 'Cause I love you just the way you look tonight. Touches my foolish heart. Lovely, don't you ever change. Keep that breathless charm. Won't you please arrange it? 'Cause I love you just the way you look tonight. Just the way you look tonight.